This show is a proud member of the Nerdy Legion Podcast Network. Get more at nerdylegion.com. Enjoy the show!
Spoiler alert! What Did You Watch This Week is a candid discussion about recent movies and TV shows, and it may contain spoilers if you haven't watched them yet. Listen at your own risk.
Episode 197 of What Did You Watch This Week? My name is Mike.
My name is John.
Hey, John, how's it going? How was your week?
It was long. I told somebody today it's been a long fucking week, and it's only Monday. And I wasn't even trying to joke. Like, literally, I picked up the phone, and she's like, what's wrong with you? And I'm like, it's been a long fucking week. And she's like, huh, okay.
Is it perhaps the sweater vest that you're wearing today that makes you feel like an 80-year-old man?
This is not a sweater vest. This is a cardigan.
Oh, sorry.
A sweater vest would be a vest. This has arms.
That's
and
true.
It has buttons.
That's true. Okay, I take it back. Yeah. Is it the cardigan you're wearing?
No.
No?
No, because I wasn't wearing
Actually,
it at work.
It does look pretty stylish.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It frames my young and old Yoda shirt very nicely.
It's not young Yoda. It's the child.
The child.
And
baby
Yoda.
Yoda.
Yeah. Do people ever say it's just baby Yoda and get it over with?
Nope. I think they're proud of the fact that it's the child. And he probably has a name, and he'll get a name like in the second or third season.
I'm actually surprised that they haven't pushed out Toys of the Child yet. Like, someone had to have seen that before even he came out when, like, well, we're going to see him in the first episode. So the day after that drops, we need to get the toys out there on the shelves.
See, here's what happened. In order to do that, they would have had to have production going on those toys, and they wanted to keep this a complete secret. So that's why all the toys that you can order are coming out in like May, because they wouldn't let it happen. They were like, no, we're going to take the hit on it right before Christmas.
We saw Plastic Galaxy. We know what happened with the first movie. We just want to repeat it.
Damn it.
Because we feel like the fans will be more loyal this time around. Yeah.
So,
I did see that new Funko Yoda and his hot.
Doesn't that look great?
$32 seems reasonable. Comes out in February.
It's two pieces. It's an actual Funko Pop, and then it's also his hut.
Well, it's funny because, like, but here's something that happened to me recently. Pete Dunne, they came out with a figure last year. It was a Target exclusive WWE Pete Dunne figure. And it sold out instantly. You can't find it anywhere. $75 to $150 online. I mean, it's just absurd.
Damn.
Well, they just released the second Pete Dunne figure, which apparently a year is quick turnaround to launch a second figure. I didn't realize that considering how many fucking times they have Finn Balor and AJ Styles and all those coming out constantly. But anyways, so this was just general Elite 75. Pre-sale was $32.99 for the figure. And it did come with the UK Championship belt, but I was like, I can't justify $32.99 on a wrestling action figure.
No.
A brand new one especially. I just can't. I went and looked the other day. It's out. It's sold out. It's now on back order. Doesn't back order till March. But you can buy it for $24.99. So it's $8 cheaper.
Okay.
This right now, so I'm considering ordering it now.
Okay.
I'm more apt to want to order it at this point.
All right.
But then I think about it, and it's like, do I need it, though? Or is it just because I want it?
What would you do with it?
I'd go stand it on a shelf in the hallway for no one but me to see, or okay, people that walk that way with my other wrestling action figures that I have.
Okay.
Just trying to decide if I really need it that bad.
Well, philosophers would say you don't need anything other than
That's true.
Food, water, and, you know, sunlight. Some would say companionship. But I don't know.
Do I want it that badly?
There you go. That's a better question, I think.
I think the answer is yes.
Yeah?
Yeah, I think so.
I think you've talked yourself right into it.
I think I did.
Are you ordering it now?
No.
Okay.
Although that would not be
Well, you said you wanted it, and then you're like, clickety click, click, click.
Clickety click, clack.
So, Mike.
Yeah.
the theme of this podcasterino that we have been doing for 197 episodes now,
which is crazy to think about,
is what'd you watch this week? So
I watched some stuff and things.
What'd you watch this week?
Well, I watched a lot of wrestling. I went to Wrestling Live.
Okay.
The Royal Rumble was last night, Sunday night, because we're recording this on Monday, the 27th of January.
Almost through January. Almost on to February.
I was just seeing that Keith Carlson there dropped on the weather that there's no Arctic air coming down. It seems to be on hold indefinitely. And we're not going to get a heat wave or anything up this way, but we're going to be in the 30s-ish through mid-February.
That's awesome.
I'm not upset about that.
No. It's like how this past weekend we were supposed to have that big snowstorm, and instead it was just rain.
Or practically nothing.
Yeah. Yeah, and it wasn't even like a rainstorm. It was just like rain. So, yeah, I could deal with that.
pardon me. So, Royal Rumble was last night. Edge made his triumphant return in the Men's Royal Rumble match.
Spoilers.
Yeah, well, it's all over the interweb. After 9 years of not being in the ring, he allegedly signed a 3-year deal with the WWE, so he's going to go out on his own terms. He's 46, so this is definitely going to be like his last wrestling contract, I would assume.
Whoa.
What?
How old was Hogan when he got done?
Ric
Flair?
Okay, but...
Well, he's 46, so he's definitely going to go out in the next 3 years.
I honestly could see him finishing up at 49 full-time and then just doing sporadically.
Okay.
But this, I would say this is like AJ Styles, I believe, is also on his last full-time contract. Then after that would be sporadic stuff.
All right.
I think we're, yeah. So not everyone wrestles as long as Hogan and Flair did.
Okay.
It's just because they could command a very high dollar amount to be there.
Dollar bills, y'all.
It's all about the dollar bills. Anyways, I went to wrestling last week. It kicked so much ass on Friday night.
Okay.
And then the wife and I went away this weekend, and I have a very humorous story to tell you about later.
Okay.
We went to New Hampshire. We went to Fun Spot.
Okay.
It was a good time. And we watched Overboard.
The new one?
No. 1987 classic with Kurt Russell and Goldie Hawn.
I don't know.
Yeah, it was on one of the movie channels, so.
Was that the humorous story?
No.
Oh, okay.
It was about our neighbors.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Anyhow,
I imagine it has to do with sex.
It does. What did you watch this week?
I watched a lot of stuff.
I'm trying to think if I watched any movies, and I don't think I did.
I know I didn't.
Yeah.
Yeah, I know that.
You know what?
I just got an update from Amazon alerting me that one of the games that I pre-ordered has been moved back, and I've known that for several weeks now. Mm-hmm. But they're like, we're sorry to inform you that the date got pushed back.
Yep.
I knew it. It was announced a while ago. So anyway. So, yeah, I didn't watch any movies. Watched a lot of shows. I imagine you did not, based on the things you just said about watching lots of wrestling and going out of town and going to watch wrestling.
Yeah. I watched just regular TV shows.
But not that many of them.
No, not many. Want to talk about you?
About me? That's so nice.
We can talk about you, but I meant the TV show You.
Yeah.
Do you want to talk about you?
Yeah.
Go ahead, talk about it.
Did you watch it?
I did.
Okay. You may as well take over, because I've got a lot of other stuff that I can talk about, but I mean...
No, go ahead.
All right.
This show is intricate. You do a better job keeping the pieces together than I do.
This was a good episode. This was a very uncharacteristic episode for Joe, which I am going to call him Joe because now the real Will is taking such a center stage.
Yeah.
You know, well, I shouldn't say center stage, but he's featuring more predominantly.
He was more predominantly in this episode that we would need to call Joe, so yes. We can differentiate between Joe and Will.
Yes. So basically, you know, Joe is working with Will and trying to get the dirt on Hendy because, you know, he couldn't find anything, but then he finds out that Hendy has a sex dungeon.
Right.
However, he realizes that, you know, there's a security system there and he wants to make sure that he doesn't have, you know, he doesn't get caught on camera. Or later on, as what he says is, I don't need another jar of urine situation, because that was a callback to the first season when he pissed in Peach's house. in a jar and then left it up on the shelf and said, I'll come back for that later. And then the private investigator's like, they found some stuff. So anyway, he does a lot of his dialogue in his head where he's talking about how love is making him a better person, how she's really making him feel better about life, etc. But she doesn't
wing himself.
She doesn't want to tell 40 about them because whenever she starts dating somebody, 40 becomes very needy. And because he recently fell off the wagon again,
yep,
it's very hard. So she's like, we can't tell him what's going on. We have to keep this to ourselves. But he is. He's fooling himself saying, oh, she's making me a better person. She's making me think about this and think about that. And oh, I'm so happy. You know, so a lot of the stuff that he says in this episode, like when he says that he wants to stop Henderson, he's like, I'm going to do this because this is what you would want me to do. You would want me to protect her. Because at first, Delilah's little sister there, Ellie, yeah, she blows it off like she's not hanging out with Henderson anymore. She's like, no, he drinks too much. It's gross. I don't
know.
And Joe's kind of listening, like he's got his earbuds in and he's pretending that he's not listening. But he, after she leaves, the little girl says, I can't believe she put that spyware software on my phone. Which he's actually the one that did it.
Right, because, yeah.
And her friend's like, you know, oh, so you're going to take it off? She goes, no, it's more fun if she thinks that it's still working. So he has to do a deep dive on Hendy's laptop and find out that, yes, she is still meeting up with him. And, yes, she is going over to a screening. There was a lot of stuff in this episode that was very realistic and very creepy because it was realistic.
I find the most real, like, just a huge callback. The updated version of Last House on the Left, when they stab the girl to death in the woods, it's realistic because the knife goes in, the knife comes out, blood doesn't gush everywhere. It just kind of it just looked eerily real.
Yes.
Or when O kills Julia Stiles by strangling to death in O from 20 years ago, again, very realistic. The
right
moments that have stuck with me because of how realistic they were.
Yeah,
it was just creepy.
Well, it was like So when he's talking to Will, and I am jumping around a little bit here, he decides that he wants to find the evidence so that he can stop Henderson. He talks to Will, and Will's like, well, we got to find out what kind of security system he has. And he's like, well, what do you mean? So they look at some pictures of his house, and he's got those, you know, protected by ADT or whatever out on the front lawn. And Will's like, yeah, that's perfect. They put that up because they think it makes them feel safe, but it just helps people like me because then I know what frequency they're broadcasting on. That to me seems realistic, you know? I would have to see if Mr. Robot would confirm that, but it seems like a realistic
thing. It does seem realistic, yeah.
So basically he just gets a little jammer and he knows what frequency to put it on, shuts down the whole security system, which you'd think that the security company would notice that. Not that security companies and cops ever do much of anything in those respects, but
who knows, really?
So he goes in and he finds the secret room behind a hidden book panel, which he even says, you know, very Bond villain of you. goes downstairs, finds, you know, a cigar box filled with Polaroids. Mm-hmm. Even I looked at this and said, this isn't enough. They're just Polaroids of what looks like unconscious girls, half undressed, fully undressed. But there's nondescript backgrounds. There's nothing else in the picture to indicate where they're from. Mm-hmm. So Joe drops them off under Delilah's doormat to help her break the case open. And when she talks to her cop fuck buddy, he's like, yeah, we can't do anything with this because there's no.
It was the way it was obtained.
Well, it wasn't just that, but there's nothing in there to prove anything. Henderson's not in there. They don't have his DNA on there. Mm-hmm. They don't have any indication that it's his house. They're like, if we had found them at his house, we could have had something.
Right.
So basically she says, yeah, this person actually fucked it all up for me. So he's like, all right, I'm going to catch him in the act. So he goes there and pulls a Peach, you know, where he kind of hovers in the house while he's watching Henderson. This was another part that was very creepy because of its realism. So Ellie shows up to do the screening and he's like, hey, you know, my friend got sick, so you can't come in. And she's like, what do you mean? I came all the way down here. He's like, no. You're 15 years old. I'm a grown man. You can't come in here and be with me by yourself. That's too creepy. People are going to talk. She's like, come on. I'll be cool. Just watch my film that I'm making. And he's like, look, you got to leave right afterwards because.
Yeah, see, he comes out. But no. He told me that actually, like, he's.
Yeah.
He's a predator who's. Yeah.
Yeah. And Joe's even saying that. He's like, yeah, he's he's building your trust by trying to insist that you don't come around.
Right.
And it's all a lie. So Joe watches him finally do the deed and put the roofie in the girl's drink.
So, Bill Cosby here.
Yep. So nice.
Well, I think that's
tragic that we can now do that.
I think that's what it's going to be from now on. Try to give him the old Bill Cosby.
The pudding
pop. The old pudding pop.
Yep. So Joe causes a distraction because apparently Henderson has a cat. And he actually says he's never got a cat. And then he goes over and puts like twice as much in Henderson's drink so that it'll affect him first.
I'm not going to say I didn't go, yeah, when I saw that.
And then tiptoes out of the room, takes him downstairs, straps him to a chair, puts the limited edition headphones on him to blast the music.
Didn't you see this going wrong from the moment it started?
Oh, yeah, because he was doing it all pure emotion. Like, he was winging it.
It wasn't Joe's methodical law. And we've seen from the first season, especially, we've seen when Joe is methodical and thinks about things, he doesn't fuck up.
Right.
When he's emotional, he fucks up.
So, sorry, I skipped this part, but basically, he was hanging out with 40 because he's trying to bridge the gap. Because 40 caught him and Love having lunch or brunch with her friends and lost his shit. You said you were doing stuff today, man. And then he becomes a petulant little child. You know, he's like, I need Love to cut my hair. And she needs to take me suit shopping because only she can do it. And Joe's being decent about it. But then he's helping him write his screenplay for a horrible movie. And the only way that he can get out of it is to tell him, oh, you should go to South By and pitch your movie. Take the red eye and go down to Texas. And then Love finds out, so she's going with him. So at least now Joe is free to stop Henderson. So now he's got Henderson tied up in the basement.
Yeah, but then, of course, shit with Love is fucked up. But
yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Because she's starting to not dig some of the shit that he's pulling. And it's understandable. Whatever. So he's got Henderson down there, and Henderson starts getting in his head. You know, I'm fucked up. I was molested as a kid. This is why I do these things. I never touch the girls. I just take pictures of them. And Joe's like got his knife to the guy's wrists and he's cutting. And he's like, you know, admit it on camera. And he's like, what do you want me to do? And he hides behind a mask of Henderson, you know, a little cardboard cutout mask. And then in the middle of it, again, blind emotion, rips it off and starts, no, you stay out of my head. You're not going to get in my head. Because Henderson's like, I could tell that this happened to you, too. I could tell that you're all fucked up. And kind of loses it and then realizes, oh, shit, now you've seen me. And Henderson breaks out of the chair, starts running upstairs. Joe grabs him and he falls down and smashes his head open.
You know, it always happens a lot on TV and movies, people falling down a flight of stairs and dying.
Yeah.
It doesn't happen a whole lot in real life.
Nope. But he's dead because there was a lot of blood. Well, we assume he's dead.
No, he's got to be dead.
Well, there was a lot of blood. And then in one of the rare comedic moments for this show, the Roomba came by and started sweeping up the blood. But Joe was concerned because he had gotten a nosebleed and dropped a drop of blood on the ground, and now they were mixing together. And he's like, oh, God, it's going to mix my blood together. So then he takes the Roomba, puts it in a trash bag along with some other stuff, and then cleans up the smeared blood but leaves the other blood to make it look realistic. I mean, kudos to him for, you know, thinking that part of it.
Yeah, I got to feel like that's not going to fool anybody.
No, I've got to feel the same way. But he at least tried something, I guess. Meanwhile, this whole episode, we've been getting flashbacks of Joe's childhood, which we've gotten one of those before. But now we're actually seeing, like, his mom picked up a guy in a grocery store.
Mom's a hoe bag.
Took off for a couple hours to bang him. And then dad, like, was putting lit cigarettes out on Joe's arm to convince him to tell him the truth. And he didn't. And she's like, don't worry, honey. You kept mommy's secret. That was so good of you. And now I'm going to keep another secret with you. I'm going to kill that guy someday. Okay. Yeah. Kudos.
Well, we did get the foreshadowing when Hendy's like, I can see that you're fucked up, too.
Because
Joe is fucked up.
Yep.
Not just from what we've seen, but from his past, clearly.
But the episode ends on a big twist, which makes you have to wonder what exactly is going on with this.
Well, no. I don't know. I don't know what twist you're going to tell. Are you talking about 40?
Yeah, and his new girlfriend.
Okay, well, what about Joe letting Will out?
Well, that was very interesting. It was less of a twist, though, because they kind of, like, telegraphed it.
Yeah.
You know, where Will was like, look, man, you got to let me out at some point. And he's like, what proof can you give me that you won't turn me in? He's like, you're right. I'll have to think on that. And then he's like, there's no answer. There's no way that I can prove to you that I won't turn you in.
Yeah.
And Will finally decides that this is what he has to do to be the right person for love, that he has to be the right guy and let this guy go.
And now real Will's going to go live his life elsewhere, and fake Will's going to keep being – Joe's going to keep being fake Will?
Yeah, because allegedly he has an internet girlfriend who lives in, like, Sri Lanka or something like that, and he's going to go – I like how he said, if you go in my closet and you get my Beast Wars box, it's got all the stuff in there to make a passport. And I'm like, Beast Wars, that's great. So stupid. Nobody would ever look at that.
Yeah.
But, yeah, he lets him go, and – marches him right outside of the cage. Like, I was expecting him to, like, stab him or something, but no.
Yeah, I kept waiting for him to kill him instead, just...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which could come back to bite him in the ass. Could come back to help him later on. I don't know.
But this Will that was captured seemed pretty fucked up himself.
Yeah, yeah. And paranoid, delusional, on meds.
So 40.
40 went to South By with love, and, you know, she's ready to go back home to Will, and he's like, look, we gotta... bring this girl along. I met her. It's like kismet. I've never fallen for anybody this fast. It's amazing. And Love's like, okay, well, let me meet her. And it's Candace.
No, it's Amy.
Sorry, it's Candace.
No, I clearly remember her saying her name was Amy.
Oh, maybe it's Candace's twin.
Yeah, see, yeah, you were just mistaken.
Yeah, that must have been it.
No, it was a good episode, but you're right. It was a lot different from it was different
a
little bit from what we usually get. But it's a great season so far.
Oh my god!
Yeah,
I so look forward. It's like buying yourself a dessert, and then letting it sit in the fridge or on the counter or whatever, and just savoring, knowing that you're going to get to eat it soon. Like looking at it and being like, I'm going to have you in sight soon.
Yeah, I'm enjoying the watching on tape delay, if you will.
Me too.
Speaking of tape delay, we might as well talk about the last episode of The Witcher.
Yes, because now it's finally over.
Yeah, well, for you.
Yeah.
I'm like, watched it back before, around Christmas time. Back before Christmas, maybe even finished it.
Back when Ciri was still a baby. So most of this episode was the battle.
Okay. So my memory's going to have to be refreshed. I probably should have tried to watch this again this week.
Sure.
But,
doesn't sound like you had time.
I didn't. But Yennefer... like, finally, shows kind of her all potential in this.
Yeah.
Like, that she's a leader, you know, that she's very powerful.
Yeah.
And...
that's why her boss kept telling her to hold in your chaos.
Yeah.
Reserve your chaos.
Until the end of this episode, or near the end of the episode, where she said, unleash your chaos.
Yeah. And she nuked him.
Oh, fuck yeah, she did.
Yep. Yep, but yeah, she spent most of the episode, like, up in the tower, like, calling out positions, directing, you know, you do this, you do this. There was some sinister shit going
on. There was some vicious fucking killing.
Yeah.
Vicious fucking killing. Like, see, my notes are gone because I accidentally deleted them. Think about it. Yeah. But, like, didn't one of the sorcerers, one of the witchers, whatever you want to call them, get, like, both her arms cut off.
Yeah. Yeah. Because she was holding her arms out, like, to stop him. And Yen's like, no! And slices right up through. Yeah. Triss. I don't know if Triss is going to be okay, but she had the guy who, like, stabbed through with a torch and, like, was scalding her chest and her throat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're all gone.
Yeah.
Practically.
Which is bad because Triss actually survived. She was actually a main character in the games.
Yeah. It's just...
but what was really interesting was, again, we had this whole weird, like, the time delay kind of thing. Because Geralt was out of commission through most of this episode. He went and he fought some ghouls.
Well, this guy was burying some dead refugees, and Geralt stopped him from being attacked by this monster and got bit himself.
Yep.
These ghouls, like you said, and that pretty much he was unconscious the majority of this episode.
Well, he was supposed to die. Like, he even looked at the bite and he was like, well, shit. Well, it's a good way to go out, at least.
Yeah.
Like, he knew he was dead. And then the wood chopper there took him back to his place. But he spent a lot of time, like, talking to him. And once again, kind of like with you, we got some flashbacks of Geralt as a child.
Yeah, which I thought was cool as hell.
Yeah. because his mom basically abandoned him.
But we don't, it wasn't as simple as she just left him. No. I mean, yes, she did, but you see it's a lot more complicated than that.
Yes. Yeah. It wasn't just the first time we meet her, she's abandoning him.
Right.
You know, she seemed like she was a good person, but yeah, she eventually like drove him up to the gates of Kaer Morhen and said, oh, go get me some water. And then he stepped off the path to go get her some water. And when he came back, she wasn't there. And Vesemir, just from off screen, because they haven't cast him yet. So we just get Vesemir's voice saying, I've been waiting a long time for you. And so he has some delusions of that. Mm-hmm. He also has a delusion. I don't know if it's a delusion or if it really happened later, where his mother is tending his wounds. And she tells him, she's like, you know, I'm the only one that can heal you. And this is what I do. I help people. You know, I had to let you go. And he loses it on her. He's like, you know, do you realize that only 3 out of every 10 boys survived it? Did you know that before you took me out there?
Yeah.
You know, why did you just leave that? And she's like, Geralt. And he's like, no, you don't get to use that name. That's the name Vesemir gave me.
Yeah.
You don't get to use that name. And she basically treats him and then takes off. And we don't know if she was actually an illusion or not.
No, we don't. And for the rest of the episode, we pretty much get him on the back of the cart with this merchant taking him to his house.
Yep.
On the other side of things, we have Ciri, who, if I remember correctly, she was at the end of the last episode of this episode, where the kids that used to play with her when she like she is approached by kids that used to play with her when she was younger. And she's excited to see them and happy to see them. But they basically are like, you're a piece of shit. We only played with you because we had to, because you were the princess. And
that was the end of the last episode.
Okay. This and that.
Slash the beginning.
Okay. All right. That's what I thought.
The fallout was the beginning of this.
Yeah. And then they're going to do something to her. And she kind of wigs out. And then when she wakes up, they're all dead.
Scorched earth.
And not just dead. I mean, they are fucked up. I think isn't one guy like stuck through a tree or some shit? Yeah, it was
the ground's all scorched around her and
It was bad. Yep. And that woman who kind of helped her in the last episode comes across and is just like, hey, let's go.
Yeah.
I'm gonna help you some more.
Yeah, come on.
Yeah. And takes her to her house and meets her son. And she's like, she either had a daughter and it died, or she's going to treat Ciri like
she's never had a daughter. She says
that's right.
With the war coming,
yes,
because they can hear the war happening. They can hear the Battle of the Keep happening.
Yeah,
and she says, with the war coming, if I die tomorrow, I've led a good life. I've found true love. I've lived in a happy house. I've had a beautiful son, but I've never had a daughter. It's the one regret that I have. So I'd like to treat you like my daughter.
Right. And the son's like, she might be trouble.
Yeah. Just saying.
She might be a little...
Have you looked at the girl?
Troublesome. But, and this is what's really amazing, when Ciri kind of wakes up and runs off into the forest.
Yeah.
Yeah. How does she do that?
She doesn't really say. She has a feeling that she has to run.
And right at the same time, you see her hit the woods. They do this cool aerial shot of her into the woods. And all of a sudden, on the other side of the screen, you see the merchant on the horse come in with the buggy. And there's Geralt on the back of it. And it's one of those, oh, come on! No.
And I thought they were going to leave it like that.
Yes. And instead, we actually get – we'll go back to the war. But instead, we actually get Geralt waking up and
– he hears the girl from the first episode saying – the girl who's in the woods is your destiny. You're tied together.
And she takes off in the woods and Ciri's in the woods and they meet up.
For the first time.
Yep. And they hug.
Yep.
And the episode's over.
Yep.
That was No.
They hug and she looks at him and says,
oh, that's right.
Who's Yennefer?
Yes, that's right. That's right.
And then the episode's over. And it's like, what? Because
meanwhile, back with during the war.
Meanwhile, back on the plantation.
Yeah, exactly. Meanwhile, back at the...
in the Legion of Doom.
Thank you. That's what I was thinking.
We have this battle, and it looks like for the longest time the mages are going to hold out. This is basically all the good mage council versus Nilfgaard.
Yes,
and
Nilfgaard's one evil mage, if you will, who seems to be is. I think the reason why she's so powerful is because she's angry.
Not only because she's angry, but she's willing to sacrifice everyone else. Like those fireballs that they're raining down on the place.
Yes.
They're killing the people who conjure them.
Yeah.
It's sucking the life force out of them, and then she's the one flinging them. She's like, oh, I'm flinging
them. And she's forcing them to do it. Yeah. And they do it because they feel like they have no choice, but it's like, fuck that. Run away.
Yeah. Yeah. Tell her to go.
What's the worst that's going to happen? She's going to kill you? Yeah. You're going to die anyway.
Right. Exactly.
I never understood that part. It's like...
I don't either.
But the firing squad, run away. Maybe you'll live.
Right.
But if not, you're going to die anyways. Yeah. But I didn't die. I die a coward's death. You're still dead.
A coward dies 1,000 deaths. A hero dies but once.
No, no.
But you're not a hero.
No, no. You're fucking dead. When the heart stops and the brain stops, it doesn't matter what happened to cause it. It just happened and you're done.
Yeah. So she also sent one male mage down...
Oh.
To the keep.
Yeah.
And he was like, he was a living smoke machine. Like, he was just coughing out smoke behind him and kind of enveloping the whole valley in mist so that nobody could see. And he finally got through the front gate to drop the silver box that she gave him. And he died.
Yes.
But he dropped the silver box, which had all those worms come out. And then the worms kind of did a Wrath of Khan thing where they got inside people's ears.
Yeah.
And made them... blow themselves up from the inside. Like, they took all the little explosive vials that they had, got up high in the keep, and dropped them on the other explosive vials.
Yeah.
Which was heartbreaking, you know?
Yeah, well, basically it made the mages turn against themselves and kill each other.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And like we said, you know, it started looking like the mages were doing okay, but then, you know, Tresselia, the boss lady there, she went out to face Nilfgaard and... Yeah. Got zapped with some black powder and got all of her powers sucked and she was...
Yeah, Fringilla just did that.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you. I couldn't remember her name, Fringilla.
Yeah. I'm sitting literally, I just remembered. I've been trying to think of it for 10 minutes.
So the end of this battle sees, like you said, Yennefer unleash the beast and nuke the shit out of everybody. Just flames belching right out of her hands and just... cascading across like a sea of fire across the battlefield, ripping people up, just shredding things. And then we get the reunion with Geralt and Ciri. And
but the way they ended, though, we don't know what happened with the end of the war. We don't have the Yennefer. We don't. I mean, that's a huge cliffhanger.
It is. Yeah. But they've already started on the second season.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to the second season.
I'm sure you didn't watch it, but I will say I watched the second episode of Sex Education, season 2.
Oh, yeah?
Great show.
Well, yeah.
It really is an enjoyable show. I'm really enjoying this. I really like the characters. Right up there with, I switch back and forth. I only watch one of those a week, but I've been watching more of Schitt's Creek, and Jesus. You and your wife would like this show.
It's on Hulu, you said, right?
No, it's on Netflix.
Netflix. All right, we'll have to watch it.
It's 5 seasons. They're half-hour episodes, 13 episodes per. You got to check it out with the wife. Tell me what you guys think.
Okay. So, I watched one episode of The Crown with Kate. She was watching it. I was kind of on the couch reading, but I ended up half watching it.
That's good things.
That's a solid show. Mm. I mean, I didn't start from the beginning. I actually think I might have watched the season finale. I don't know. a solid show, though. And there's a lot of history. There's a lot of, like, a lot. Kate was telling me, she's like, she watches it, and she finds herself pausing it or at the end of the episodes looking stuff up to see how accurate it is. It's pretty damn accurate. Mm. It's kind of fascinating because it's the life story of the queen who's still alive, you know, but like back when she first kind of got the crown around that time frame.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of crazy because, I mean, yeah, it was 1950s, but I mean, I guess it's kind of weird when they're telling the life story of someone who's still around like that.
Yeah, I can see that.
You know, I mean... Yes, they do it all the time. It's happened in the past, blah, 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 blah. But I'm just saying, though, it's just kind of, I mean, fuck, Audie Murphy actually played himself as himself reliving war things that he did.
Mm.
So, I mean, became a successful actor, but also, like, played himself in his own life story.
Right, right.
Howard Stern did the same thing, played himself in his
own
life story.
That was odd.
Yeah, that was. That was very odd.
What was I going to say? I'm going to have to move that one to next week.
Wow.
That trailer that I wrote down to watch, but I never watched it. So
I feel like I watched trailers, but I can't remember. Like, no, I know I watched ones you sent me, but I can't remember if I sent you any.
I don't think that you did.
I don't think so either.
No, you were slacking this week.
Yeah, well, it is what it is.
I would say I watched Prodigal Son. It's back. It's actually gotten better. I am enjoying it. So.
Okay.
Yep.
Take your word for it.
Okay.
Is Legends back?
Yes.
I didn't watch it.
Fucking forgot. Son of a bitch.
I forgot it was back.
God damn it.
I didn't watch Legends, Arrow. I heard a lot of people didn't. One headline was, what's the Arrow spinoff going to be called?
Green Arrow and the Canaries.
Green Arrow and the Canaries does not deserve to have its own series, was the headline. Did you watch it?
I did.
And?
I can agree with that.
Okay. I heard that Laurel Lance might be the heel, the villain in it.
No.
Okay.
No. I'll give you a rundown of the DC shows, because I know you're not going to watch them.
I am going to watch Legend.
Okay.
Legends. Just so don't tell me about that one.
Okay.
Because I will watch Legends.
I will say this. All four of them are dealing directly with the aftermath of Crisis.
They have to. They would have to, yeah.
Like, they legitimately. So, like, on Batwoman, there's some shit going down in Gotham. There's this new criminal called the Terrier, basically because she's using one of those Apple emoji heads that talks, but it looks like a little terrier dog. And she's just a hacker. You know, she takes over a subway car and she wants $5 million to get out. And it turns out, this is where it gets a little heavy-handed. It turns out that it's a girl who was unjustly outed by her friend. She had a girlfriend, and she broke up with her, and the girlfriend decided that as revenge she would let her parents know that she was a lesbian and her parents are religious. So they freaked out, and they want to disown her, and blah, 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 blah. So she's feeling very lost, and she just wants to get out of Gotham. Okay, understandable. But, you know, that's juxtaposed with the whole Kate is dealing with this, you know, where she's becoming a more public face as Batwoman. But there's this super cop that everyone's calling Captain America. And it's really throwing me off because he's not Captain America. And I know this is DC.
Why would they do that?
But they keep saying Captain America over and over again. But he's like, you know, Mr. Blonde, hunky guy. And he keeps, like, showing up on the scene where she is. And they keep getting into these scrapes. Like, he grabs her and, like, throws her down because she's about to get hit or something like that. And so everyone thinks that they're having a relationship. And so Kate's like, well, I'm gay. And Fox is like, yeah, but Batwoman doesn't have to be. You know, Kate Kane is gay, but people think Batwoman is straight, and so it becomes a gay-straight thing.
Oh, that is so... I'm sorry. Hold on. That's dumb, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Like I said, it was pretty heavy-handed. But the weird thing was, in the end of the episode, Beth shows up.
I was just going to ask you, were there any significant changes?
Yes, because this whole episode had Alice, and Alice was fucking with stuff.
Yeah.
And then in the end of the episode, Beth shows up to talk to Kate. And Kate freaks out and grabs her and tries to beat the shit out of her. And Beth's like, what are you doing? What are you doing? And legitimately says she is Beth and she's been away on holiday. And you knew this. And why are you attacking me? And what's going on? And so now there's two versions in this world.
Oh, I didn't know if someone else was going to be Alice.
No, I don't think so. Because then when we jump into Supergirl, the same thing's happening where we've now got five Brainiac Fives, which have all been shuttled here through wormholes because of the collapsing multiverse. One of them actually bottled his Earth, you know, like Kandor, bottled his Earth and is trying to open it back up, which would cause it to clash with this Earth.
Right.
Are we getting
an evil Brainiac?
Well, that's what's interesting is this Brainiac that we've seen, you know how he's white and he's got those three gems on his head? Well, we get the backstory on that, that basically his father put those on him, their personality inhibitors, because he freaked out one day and tried to kill his dad. And his dad was like, no, that's not happening. So he keeps these to keep him from going full Brainiac. And the other Brainiacs look at him and they're like, you're not even green. You know, what the hell? You're not connected to the great brain in the sky. And, you know, so he ends up one of them breaking and then takes off the other two, so now he is a Brainiac, and he's green, and he has the full range of his powers, and so that's going to be interesting. Meanwhile, Lex does remember who he is, and he has rewritten this world so that he can be the savior, the hero, leader of the DEO.
Right.
Kara's not having it, but he's like, look, we can either sit here and fight each other, or we can work towards a common goal. And Kara's like, nope. Nope, we're going to fight each other because you suck and I'm not going to trust you. Lena has been given back all of her memories, so she knows everything.
Why?
Because this is the theme. It turns out when we get to Green Arrow and the Canaries that Cisco actually created a portable version of John Jones touching you and giving you back your memories so that other people could get them back. they still want to keep it to mostly like the superhero people, but yeah. So, but in Supergirl, you know, we had all the Brainiacs are now gone. The two that were left at the end, because one of them got killed, one of them was stopped, and then the two that are left decide to sacrifice themselves to become part of the Great Brain. Apparently that's what happens at the end of a Brainiac's life, is they integrate themselves with the Borg Collective. And so there's
That's what I was thinking.
Yeah, so there's only one Brainy left. But he was given a message from the female Brainiac, who played the ghost Sally on Almost Human, which was a phenomenal show. And she basically said, look, on my Earth, I tried to fight Lex Luthor constantly, and I failed. With what's coming, you need to do the right thing and work with him. Your friends aren't going to like it, but you need to work with him, because I've seen what ruin it can bring if you try to fight against him. You need to help him. So he goes to Lex and he's like, look, my friends aren't going to like this, but I need to help you. We need to stop Leviathan, because Leviathan is still coming. The end.
So is Lena evil, good? She's still mad at Kara.
She's still mad at Kara. She remembers everything, still wants to be, you know, an asshole, whatever. So yeah, Green Arrow and the Canaries.
Yeah.
There's some problems here.
Yeah.
Okay. So first off, it takes place 20 years in the future.
Sure.
And everybody's bragging about the fact that Star City has been crime-free for 20 years.
Yeah.
Since Oliver Queen sacrificed himself and died, City hasn't had any crime. They say it so many times that one of the characters on the show actually says, what is this, your motto now or something? Because even they notice that everyone keeps saying it. But Laurel shows up to meet up with Dinah, and Dinah's like, right after Oliver's funeral, I woke up here 20 years in the future, and I don't exist. There's no Dinah. I never existed. So she now owns a bar. She has all of her memories. She remembers being a cop, chief of police, but she now owns a bar. She's still got the canary cry.
Okay.
And then Laurel basically shows her that what happened was, the opening scene of this was a girl gets kidnapped, a socialite gets kidnapped, and she shows her a news story that she saw because the Legends dropped her off, because 3 days from now, that girl dies. And a year from now, the city is in ruins and it's being blown up because, you know, crime comes back because of this. And so they decide to enlist Mia, who doesn't have her memories. She's just a snooty little socialite who, you know, she knew that Oliver Queen was her dad and he died. And, you know, she's proud of him. But now she's just like a rich bitch socialite and out having fun with her friends and just graduated college and, yeah, whatever. And they give her memories back, and she actually calls them assholes at one point for it. You know, she's like, I was happy, and now you've shown me that the world is miserable and everything's miserable. And now they're going to rescue the girl and then fight crime, even though there's no crime. Oh, but wait, the Deathstrokes are back, because now there's somebody else who's walking around with the same kind of technology, giving JJ, who in the original timeline, he was the leader of the Deathstrokes.
Yeah.
And then in this timeline, he's actually a good guy who's Mia's fiance. But then he gets his memories back, so now he knows that he was the leader of the Deathstrokes.
So is he evil now?
I don't know. It's annoying. And it takes place 20 years in the future, so I don't care.
So there's still a chance this show might not get picked up.
Yeah.
Or it might get canceled.
Yeah, let's keep our fingers crossed. Because it's kind of pissing on the legacy.
Yeah. Well, I think Green Arrow did a good job pissing on its own legacy here.
Mm. Yeah,
I will watch tomorrow night's episode at some point this week before the final episode. Yeah, yeah, I'll watch that.
I will say this.
And I am going to watch Legends.
I will not tell you about Legends. However, I will say two things. One, it was fucking great.
Of course it was.
And two, it's called Meet the Legends.
So we get to meet all the Legends?
No.
Oh.
No. It's a behind-the-scenes documentary.
Like, behind the music?
Yes.
Yes.
With a camera crew and everything.
Yes.
It's so fucking good.
Woo!
It's,
I'm excited.
Yeah. But it's got some really good twists in it.
Nice.
And yeah, I can't wait for you to watch it.
Did you watch any of the October Faction?
I watched the first episode only.
I have not watched any of it.
Okay.
Based on the first episode watching,
okay,
should we also make this a weekly watch?
Yes.
Okay. I'll watch that this week.
Because I watched the first episode and went, wow, this is really good. And I kind of want to slow burn it. And then I told my sister, hey, this is a really good show. And she's like, great. And then she came to me and she goes, you were right. That's a really good show. And I said, yeah. I said, you liked it? And she goes, yeah. I'm like seven episodes in. I'm like, okay. So you're not taking the slow burn approach. She's like, no, I couldn't stop. I said, okay. So it's based on a comic book.
Yeah.
I will tell you.
Oh, it's good. I'm definitely brushed up with my details and what it is and what it's about and everything. I just
the first episode, you think they're going to go a certain way. They do not. And I was very happy about that. And again, I talked to my sister and I said the same thing. And she's like, yeah, I thought they were going to do the same thing. And they didn't. And I'm very glad.
Nice.
But yes. Yes, that was good. And I've decided that The Good Doctor is no longer on my list. At most, it'll be a background show. It wasn't even on this week, and I didn't care.
Yes, it was.
Oh, then I didn't care.
It was an episode called Mutations.
Oh. Tell me what I missed.
Some guy's got some sort of mutated gene, and so Carly, of course, ends up getting called in to help the team diagnose it. So now she has to actually work with patients as opposed to slides, so her and Sean get to work together.
Does this strengthen their relationship or weaken it?
Well, of course, she learns a valuable lesson about, because, you know, she's...
Oh, boy.
Acting out of sorts when they get back together because Sean wants to, like, fucking stuff and she doesn't want to.
Yeah, fucking stuff.
Yeah.
HR fucking stuff.
Yeah, and she doesn't want to because she's feeling odd and Sean can't figure it out. I did what you asked. I kicked Leah out. We're not living together anymore. You know what I mean? Like, Sean's like, I did everything you asked. Why aren't you letting me put penis in vagina? But then by the end of the episode, she, like, learned, oh, I feel good. And she goes, you know, penis in vagina.
Oh, so they actually have the sex?
They do have the sex, yeah.
Oh.
And, what's her face there? The Claire. So she's trying to, like, deal with shit. And basically we have this cancer kid who's got a tumor and they're going to operate on, but his tumor's gone, so they don't have to. So he can go to the prom. And his fellow cancer patient girl who they met in cancer in chemo. They met in chemo. She also was cancer clear. They were going to go to the prom together, and they were excited. But then all of a sudden, she had a seizure, and turns out she's got a brain tumor. And you know, mom's being overly protective, of course. So Claire decorates a section of the hospital all up so they can have the prom there.
Aw.
For just the two of them. And he's got to wear a mask and this and that and everything. And, of course, mom shows up at the last minute to see, you know, hey – I brought her favorite stuffed animal and, oh my God, what's happening? But instead of, like, making a production about it and this and that, she sees how happy her daughter is with her boyfriend. And so mom's like, just don't tell her I was here, and leaves.
Aww.
And then when they're doing the operation on her, they find that the brain tumor is, it's really in there and they can't remove it surgically. And so basically she's going to die. But then she has another grand mal seizure and dies.
Ouch.
Yeah. So it's a pretty sad ending.
Sounds like it.
I can't decide if I want to keep watching the show or not myself.
I can't anymore.
I had it on, but I was doing schoolwork through the whole thing. Yeah. I don't know. Kind of feel the same way about New Amsterdam.
See, that I'm going to stick with. That I like some of the stories enough.
Yeah.
Although some of them are way too... okay, so for instance, this week, the girl coming to live with... I can't remember his name.
Dr. Sharp?
Not Frome.
You're talking about VJ. Yeah.
So he says, oh, you could come and live with me so that you don't have to go home to your family. And then, of course, it's terrible in the beginning because everything in his house is a shrine to his son and his wife.
And everything, yes, his past, not his future.
Yeah, and he's like, oh, you could stay in here. Look, it's my son's room. You know, the guy that left you, impregnated you and left you.
Yeah.
Look, here's his famous wall of posters, and here's all of his stuff that my wife told me to leave here in case he comes home.
Yeah.
And she's like, I can't live here. Yeah. I'm sorry. I'm going home.
Here's my wife's craft room. We can just move this one clothes drying rack, and we can put the crib right here.
Yeah. And... so then she says, no, I can't do it. He has a moment of realization and then cleans out the house so that she can live there.
And she shows up to get her stuff and sees, oh, this is my place now too. I'll stay.
And that's what I'm talking about. Those story threads that start and then resolve at the end of the episode, that are just too over the top like that. Like, he should have learned all this by now. He should have known going into it that a pregnant woman who doesn't know him that well isn't going to want to stay in a house where she has to work around the shit of his family.
Well, the awkwardness, too, goes back to the fact that he kind of liked her, had a crush on her, wanted to date her, and then her son dated her, and then her son impregnated her. And
Yeah,
so there's that awkwardness that they don't talk about.
Yeah.
From dealing with the fact that psychiatrist said he probably had narcissistic, and he asked someone about it, and he asked Sharp about it. And she goes, oh, you mean like a colleague coming to ask you a question and about something, you making it all about yourself?
Yeah.
And he just closes the book and goes, I'm sorry, what did you need?
Yeah.
And then he just pounds some crappy wrapped snack cakes at the end of the episode.
Which was interesting because he had all kinds of snacks in that drawer, but he dug out those ones specifically.
Yeah.
Like, he pushed everything else aside to find one of those. And then he pushed everything aside to find another one.
Like, he found like a half dozen in that drawer.
And he just kept stuffing his face.
Yeah.
Because she kind of nailed it.
Max met a new love interest.
Can we really say that, though?
Yep. He brought his daughter in for a six-month well-being checkup. Of course, they find some small thing. He demands an MRI and a biopsy and this and that. And then there's another mom with a little bit older kid who's also young. And you know, they help each other out.
Because that kid's having tubes put in her ears.
Yeah. So they help each other out, and, you know.
Yeah, she helps him out realistically by teaching him how to
calm his daughter.
Child.
Oh, dude.
She goes, have you tried the S's? Shh, shh, shh.
Literally? It works.
No. I'm saying shh works for just about everybody.
Yeah,
like,
it does.
Everybody knows how to go shh, shh.
And you pat the back and bounce them. Oh, yeah, it works. And Max is like, I'll take you out back so you can watch your daughter have the tubes. And even though the doctor said he didn't want you out there.
Yeah.
Oh, I can do that? Yeah, I know a guy.
Yeah.
He never says, I run this place. But he walks out back and everyone's just like, hey, Max.
Like, she gives him legitimate information that will help him in his life.
And he says, look how big my dick is.
Yeah. He basically goes, hey, you can't do this without me, little lady.
Yeah.
I'm here for you. Just remember. Yeah. Finger guns.
Yeah. But at the end, she gives him her number, and he's like, "Well," and he's like, "No, play date. You know how that works. You're gonna need. Welcome to the next phase."
Yeah, exactly. She blows it right off. She's like, "No," because he's like, "I'm not ready to start date." And she's like, "No."
And Sharp's backstory in this one is she's no longer the deputy director, but yet Max wants all this major changes made, so she goes through and makes all the changes and says Max said this and Max said that and. Yada yada, signs a signature at one point where she tells the clerk, turn around. Why? You want me to plausible deniability? Yeah, this is something Max would do, you know?
Which, that whole thing, everything that she was doing was brilliant.
It was, yeah. And then, like, at the end, the CEO, whoever it is like, you can't do this. She's like, you got to walk with me. No, I can. Why? Walk faster. And we find out she got, like, the military to bring in the experimental blood. Yeah. And, the military helicopter landing on the hospital and then running out and saying one of our own, I actually totally believe that.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
Like how the woman, the head of the board, was following her the whole time.
Yes.
She's like, you can't do this. What are we doing up here? And she's like, yeah. The guy says that, you know, he's like, we heard one of our own. Here's the experimental blood. And she's like, you did that? Get down there.
Yeah.
Go.
Is that for Bubba's patient? Yeah. Well, then go.
Yeah.
And which then, I thought was cool. That means the CEO was actually knows what's going on in the hospital.
Right. But then Sharp kind of talks to Max at the end and she's like, you heard about everything that I did. And he's like, yeah, that was crazy.
Yeah.
And she says, I finally got the rush that you must get all the time when you do stuff like this.
Yep.
I've always been there to be your safety net. Now you're going to have to be mine because she doesn't want to go overboard like he does sometimes. So,
you know who directed this episode? Lucy Liu.
Really?
Yeah. Yeah. That Lucy Liu.
Interesting.
Yeah.
That is kind of cool.
Random, it feels like, but yeah.
Yeah.
excuse me. Shit, was there this? Oh, you know what I forgot to watch? This Is Us.
No, you specifically said it's part one of two.
Part one of two. Yes, all right.
You sent me that message early on in the week,
okay,
and I was like,
all right.
Hey, I'm not going to watch it.
It just dawned on me
the same message
that I didn't watch it, yeah.
Because she watches it, too, and I was like, it's part one of two. Don't watch it. She's like, good.
Yeah, that's right.
I Stump Town.
Yeah.
Did you watch that?
Trying to remember.
Okay.
I know it's only been a week, but sometimes it feels longer.
This is the further continuation of Gray selling the heroin. trying to get in with
them. Oh, no, then I did not.
Okay.
The last episode I saw was the end where he's like, oh, we got to get you to sell these drugs for us.
Gotcha.
Just like I haven't caught up in Perfect Harmony because Kate just told me that she doesn't want to watch it anymore. So I want to watch that already because it's quick and easy.
Yeah.
I did watch Schooled. Femeller?
Femeller.
There we go.
Okay. So once again, they're really focusing on Meller.
Oh, I'm okay with it.
This was all about dress code.
Yeah.
On the one hand. And how, you know, back in the 90s, people were doing some rebellious things.
When they came out with the co-ed naked shirts and the Long Johnson shirts, and even had blurred out the Long Johnson ones. I remember so many of those.
Oh, yeah?
I think my favorite was Long Johnson rowing, where you see him laid back in the boat, and he's like, ah. And then you hear stroke, 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 and all the girls are sitting in the boat, but their hands are in the center.
Yeah.
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 Co-ed naked this or that.
Yeah. How many different co-ed naked sports are there? 357. Oh, my God.
I was like, where did you get that? I bought this down at the Limited.
Yep. Lainey was called on the carpet for having too provocative of an outfit.
Yep.
It looked good. I thought she looked fine. I understand them saying, you know, it's a teacher, but.
The actress, they've got a butter face.
Oh, okay.
That's okay. Just my feeling on it.
Okay. And then Liz, the dowdy teacher.
Oh. God.
Tries to prove a point by dressing up in the same outfit that Julia Roberts is wearing in the beginning of Pretty Woman.
Like
when she's a streetwalker.
With the thigh-high boots and the dress, except I noticed she's got like fabric covering the sides.
Yeah.
So it's not exposed skin and everything, but jeez, I'm crow, that was bad.
But Glasgow's leading the parents around.
Yeah.
And sees that. And, whew.
No, it was
CB isn't allowed to wear his funky ties.
Cartoon ties. Yeah. He has to wear plain ties.
Which is terrible.
So Lainey and CB decide to dress up like Glassman and Glasgow and whatever. Nice. And and the opposite happens, of course, where they're like, oh, you look great. And then that's when, you know, she dresses up like Pretty Woman. And,
yeah.
And then the understory is Nurse Julie reveals that. I like how she's just Nurse Julie.
Yeah.
Reveals to Coach Meller that she doesn't like sports.
Yeah. Because he says, I'm going to take you to meet my family. And it's his sports family. It's like 20 people that all sit in the stands together and cheer for the same team. And she's like, I thought you meant like
Eagles.
Your real family.
Yeah.
And he's like, no, why would I talk to those people? I hate them.
Yeah. And she's going to go to Lilith Fair. And, okay, this is the best part.
The music?
The music, yes. So you have the science teacher.
Uh-huh.
Okay. What's her name?
I want to say Grace.
Whatever. Where she's giving her the rundown, and she starts singing the Indigo song. Was it?
Closer to Fine.
Closer to Fine. And she has that shaker thing, and she starts singing it. And then Lainey comes in with a guitar. I heard you singing.
Yeah,
and
then I heard the song. I had to come.
Yeah, and then the other girl joins in. I heard the song. I had to come.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And then later on in the hall,
Miller's just the whole time he's going like, what are you doing? What is going on? Why is this happening? I need to get out of here.
Trust me, you're going to want to sing this. And then later on in the hallway where she comes out singing and they all join her again. And then again at the end, I mean, I love this callback.
When Miller sings it to Nurse Julie to prove that he loves her,
that he's trying to learn about her. And they all show up.
They're like, sorry, I heard the song again. Yeah. I had to show up.
And even Lainey still has her guitar every time.
Uh-huh.
And the science teacher's got the shaker thing.
Yep.
And then is it Liz?
Yeah.
The math teacher. She shows up and she's like, my love for the song outweighs my hate of Lainey right now. Yeah. And she goes, I agree. And they all sing. And then, of course, at the end, they manage to get front row at the concert. And
yep. But they're doing things together where, like, they go to the football game and she's reading a book.
Yes.
But she still stands up for the wave and then sits back down. But she, you know.
Yeah.
And then he is listening to the sports game dressed in his shorts and his shirt.
With his oversized hat on. This is Lilith Fair on it.
Yep.
But he's got his headphones. If you're throwing, you weren't supposed to see the antenna sticking out.
At least he was honest.
When Nurse Julie was sitting there reading her book, it just reminded me of Juice so bad. Who's Julie, by the way?
Yes, absolutely.
So school is just it. I haven't watched the Goldbergs, but it hits me every week great. And in this episode, we got that behind the scenes where they actually showed the dress code for the school, and that three word phrase they kept using, which I wish I wrote down, but to describe.
Yeah,
close have to be. Yeah, too. And it's actually in the dress code.
Yep.
So that was badass.
The Good Place?
The Good Place.
Jeez. Finally.
Right?
We're finally in the good place. They get there. There's no, like, oh, you actually got dropped off at the post office or anything like that.
Right.
We're in the good place.
There wasn't a, there was no tomfoolery going on.
Right.
As far as that place.
Right.
Yeah.
But they're in the good place. The good place people take Michael off in the beginning because they say that they're going to have a special ceremony
yeah.
for him. You know, to celebrate him being in the good place for the first time. And they, I mean, long story short, they get him to sign a piece of paper, which puts him in charge of the good place. And they're all like, see ya. They fucking take off.
But why?
Because, and this is, again, one of the most genius things about this show. They realized that they were up Schitt's Creek because the good place is paradise, but it's boring.
Yes.
Because people quickly realize that when you can do anything you want and have anything you want anytime you want, it gets boring real yep. fast. You know, people need a little chaos. They need an end to the party. Like they need to know that the party is going to end at some point
right.
or that, you know, there's going to be consequences or something. And in this case, they're like, yeah, for thousands and thousands of years, people have just been up here like living whatever they want. And they got bored of it. You know, when you have superpowers, you can do whatever you want. That's why villains become villains, because
yep.
they want the challenge or something.
Yep.
So all these great minds and philosophers, and Lisa Kudrow is one of the famous philosophers that he's in love with, they're all becoming stupid because nothing matters. They just keep doing the same stupid
yeah.
stuff all the time.
And they've probably been there a long time by themselves.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No new people.
Exactly. And so Michael is put in charge because they basically are like, we don't know how to fix this.
Yep.
We're out of here.
So it kind of makes – so and in a way, them going to the good place – there's only two episodes left, which is really one episode.
Yeah.
Them going to the good place is hilarious in respects to that. It's like, here we are, and we still have to run the place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And they all realize that if they don't fix it, they're yep. going to become dumb too.
So Michael creates a door that allows people to exit the good place and end their existence peacefully.
Yep.
But they can
just
actually
stop being.
Yeah, they just stop being. And that is enough to get people going, oh, if this can actually end, then okay.
Yeah. So they tell them, they're like, enjoy everything up here. Party, you know, trash the place, do whatever you want.
Yep.
Enjoy your deepest fantasies. And then when you're ready, walk through the door.
Yep.
You're done. And everyone loses their mind. Yeah, that's exactly what they wanted. They wanted to know that there was something else.
There's a finality.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Nobody wants to go to the party that never ends.
Right.
Think about the 3-day party on How I Met Your Mother.
That's true.
You know?
That's true. It's a true story. So I'm interested to see what the last episode's going to happen, because all I'm thinking is last episode is going to take place in the future sometime, and they walk through the door. I think it's a great way to end it. If they all walk through the door and end their
business.
Yeah.
I think that would be beautiful. Oh, it's going to be rough.
That'd be crazy.
Speaking of rough.
Yeah.
Superstore. Jesus Christ. This show
on a week-to-week basis makes me want to watch it and not want to watch it.
Yeah. And sometimes it even comes down to like certain parts of the show. I'm like, I want more of this, but I want less of this. And like this week was a lot of, I didn't want this.
Oh, yeah.
It's what I call the awkward comedy, the uncomfortable comedy, like what a lot of later season Office was with Michael Scott. Like, it's very uncomfortable
yeah.
comedy. Some people love that. Kudos to them. I don't like uncomfortable comedy. Like, yeah, I didn't like most of this. The one thing that I did really like in this was seeing Marcus fucking crush it as Amy's assistant. Watching him over and over again, like, dominate these competitions. Because Marcus is a fuck-up. But
yeah.
he's really good at all of this stuff.
Right.
They're basically all the employees are threatening to call HR because Amy's playing favorites.
Yes.
She's always been playing favorites.
Well, she has, yes.
And so they're like...
Well, okay, how can she make Mateo her assistant? Wow. Because he only got the job... at the eyeglass counter because they lied and forged documents.
Yeah.
So now Amy is knowingly hiring Mateo with his forged documents.
Except she's not, because she's really paying this other kid, and the eye center is still paying Mateo,
right.
but
yeah,
you know, they're swapping.
It's fucking dumb.
And the only reason she's doing it is because Mateo whined and said, you know, oh, this guy works me too hard and he makes me do stupid stuff. And yeah. And it was just, it's
stupid. It was annoying.
It was a stupid premise.
I enjoyed watching Marcus kill it. I hated the whole Mateo everything crap.
Yep. I was kind of indifferent on Dina and Glenn, you know, both fighting about Sandra and who was going to be right. It was...
But making Sandra act the way...
Yeah.
So
I like that she...
I like when they shit on Sandra.
And I like when she locked them in and then like lost her shit on them. Like when she got them...
And then Jonah was...
Fuck Jonah, dude. Yeah. Jesus, I'm so sick of this guy. Dude, Garrett says, I'll take your shift if you cover for me on Friday, because I'm having a thing with some friends. Yeah. And Jonah can't let it go. He wants to be part of it.
Why didn't you invite me?
Yeah. Fuck you. First off, you're going to be working now. And secondly, just fuck off. Let the man have his friends.
Essentially, damn it, will you give it a rest?
Yeah.
What, Dad? I didn't do anything. No, I'm not trying to intentionally hurt Mom's feelings. You know what I wish would come back?
What's that?
The Rookie.
Yeah.
It's been too long.
It has been too long. That's another show that I look forward to.
Is it ever coming back?
Yes, it is. Yes.
Ugh.
So, yeah, we've basically got...
Doctor Who.
Doctor Who. I will say this, though. Don't ask me how, but I will say I was able to get my hands on some information so that I was able to watch the first episode of Picard.
Oh, yeah? It was on YouTube or something?
No.
Okay.
No. So I've watched the first episode of Picard. It's damn good.
Oh, I'm not surprised.
It is damn good. It really pays tribute to the Next Generation.
Yep.
It's difficult seeing Brent Spiner in the makeup again.
Yeah.
It looks weird.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if they use different contacts or something.
They did.
He looks different.
Because he's not supposed to be Data.
Well, in this he is.
I didn't think he was. Are you supposed to be an earlier version of Data or something?
These are flashbacks.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
All right.
In this episode, you're seeing flashbacks and dream sequences. They unfold a lot of lore in this first episode. They basically bring you up to speed on everything that's been happening. I will say this. I'm going to try not to give things away, but I will say that there are a few things that are happening. One, so you know there's two timelines. There's the prime timeline, which was classic Star Trek and Star Trek The Next Generation. And then there's the Kelvin timeline, which is when Nero came back in time and kind of fucked up the prime timeline.
Yeah.
Created the Chris Pine timeline.
Correct.
Which is called the Kelvin timeline.
Kelvin.
But both of those have one thing in common, which was the destruction of Romulus.
Right.
Okay. Because when it went supernova and Romulus was destroyed in the prime timeline, that happened in... And then Nero went back in time to create the Kelvin timeline, but it didn't rewrite it. So this is all prime timeline. So that can still happen. But we're not dealing with Chris Pine's Kirk. We're dealing with William Shatner's Kirk.
Okay.
Which they haven't shown up at all, but that's what the prime timeline is. So this is prime timeline stuff. The first episode was great. Again, I want to be careful because I don't want to give away stuff, but I'll say this, just to give you a little bit of a basis.
Mm-hmm.
As it stands right now, it's like 20 years after Picard is retired.
Okay.
He's living in France in a vineyard. You've seen all that in the previews.
Mm-hmm.
And synthetics have been outlawed.
Really?
Yes.
Okay.
And
so Data would be outlawed?
If he wasn't already dead. And they are sticking to that.
Well, I thought new Data.
Synthetics have been outlawed. Anybody who watches Star Trek, anybody who's watched, you know, Discovery or Next Generation or anything like that, check this shit out. This is awesome.
I really gotta watch it.
It's really good. And it was one of those... It kind of like, oh, because at the end of the episode, they do one of those, this season on Picard. and you start seeing all the stuff that's coming, and you're going, oh, shit. So, yeah. Yeah. Got to check that one out. That's all I'll say beyond that.
Okay.
Now I'm saving October Faction for next week.
Yes.
This ties into what I was just talking about. But so Patrick Stewart was doing a press tour type of thing. My mom actually told me about this, and then I read about it the next day. So Patrick Stewart was doing a press tour, and he showed up on The View, you know, that morning talk show with all the women.
Yeah.
Well, while he was on there, he was talking about Picard and blah, blah, blah. And then I guess in the middle of the whole promo.
Yes, I saw this as well. I was going to bring it up. Yeah.
Yeah. He turned to Whoopi Goldberg and said, by the way, the producers wanted me to ask you, will you come back as Guinan for the second season? She kind of lost it, dude.
Oh, yeah.
It was beautiful. What a beautiful way to do that. Like,
it was.
Kind of surprise her with it and just show up on her show and be like, oh, and by the way. And yeah, she said yes. And that's awesome. So next season. We're gonna have Guinan.
Yeah, which I'm not a huge Whoopi Goldberg fan, but she was great on the show, and it's kind of a cool nod that she's coming back.
Yep. I think she said, and I'd have to check this to make sure, but I think I had seen that she said that her character was the last one that Gene Roddenberry created, or somebody created.
I think so. I think it was him.
Yeah, the last one before he passed. So. Well, that's all the shows that I've got other than Doctor Who.
Oh, what about The Outsider?
Oh, yeah, that's right. Yeah, and Avenue 5.
Oh, see, fuck, I forgot to watch Avenue 5. And Royal Rumble was on for 6.5 hours last night. I don't know what to tell you. I'm sorry.
You've had a week to watch a half-hour show.
I know.
Okay.
I'm sorry.
So that little outburst right there... I kind of deflated it for you, buddy. Why don't you talk to us about the third episode of The Outsider? Because I know you really like this show.
Okay, well,
interesting new character.
So, okay, I'm reading the notes on it, and I'm like, did this happen? Why am I not remembering this? So it's pretty bad.
Are you reading the third episode or the fourth episode?
Third episode. There's no notes in here on the fourth episode.
Okay.
But
the fourth episode just aired last night.
Yeah. So we meet. Okay, well, first off, the detective. The detective that got called back from his hunting trip or ice fishing trip early.
Lucifer?
Yeah. Right. Jack Hoskins or whatever.
Anyway.
What? Continue. Why are you saying Lucifer?
Because he reminds me of the actor who played Lucifer in. Supernatural.
So he gets told to go out to the barn to check for all these pile of clothes that were discovered. And I'm like, well, why is everyone already there? And why is crime scene there? Why is he not there? And this and that.
Well, like I said, this one opens up with.
Yeah. Crime scene investigators and everybody there. And the detective from the, you know, Ben, whatever, from the beginning, Mendelsohn's character's there. And everyone's there. But apparently this lead detective or whoever sent to go out there, and he like goes to the bar first.
Yeah.
And by the time he gets there, it's fucking pitch black.
Yep.
And everyone's gone.
Yep.
What the fuck? Like,
was that weird?
It didn't make any sense.
And then he's exploring by himself.
Yeah, and he's just walking around like, well, crime scene's been here. They've already cleaned this all up. I'm going to have me a look-see.
Yep.
And then he gets attacked by something.
That we don't see.
And we saw like a creepy outline off, and he drops the flashlight. Then you don't see it again, and then something like attacks him. And at first, I thought, "Is it going to bite him?" But it didn't bite him. It just kind of did something to him.
Yeah, like it does something to the back of his neck.
Yeah, and we see him throughout the rest of the episode, but he's not in a good way.
No, he's not.
You know, he's not in a good way at all.
No.
You know, he gets welts all over him, and he becomes even more erratic than he was.
And he's hearing things, and...
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
They make contact with this investigator, and she's definitely got some sort of Asperger's or autism or...
Well, she says that she has gone to, like, a million different people in her lifetime from the time she was, like, 4 years old, and they've all said the exact same thing, which is, fucked if I know.
Yeah, that's true. But she's some sort of brilliant, kind of, like, savant detective-type person.
Mm-hmm.
And she can backtrack, like, Terry's movements during the trip in Dayton to try and figure out what his connection to the van is.
Yep.
And she tries to talk to Terry's father at the nursing home and kind of finds out that there's a male nurse that was convicted of murdering two young girls around the same time of their visit.
Would that be a nurse?
Probably. So is that somehow connected to Terry killing this kid or allegedly killing this kid or whatever? But the nurse is shown to be in prison around the same time as the murders. And he also commits suicide to avoid being killed by another inmate, which was fucking weird. Because it reminds me of...
Because this stuff was all happening like...
At the same time, but you didn't realize what it was.
Yeah.
But like, okay, so it reminds me of Terry when he was in prison. And like that guy said, "We're coming for you tonight, child killer."
Yeah.
And it was like, this is the same thing. This guy took his glasses out and just sat there on his bed, took the lens out of his glasses and sharpened the lens to make something to kill. To
make a hook. It wasn't even like, I thought he was just going to sharpen out one of the edges.
Yeah, no.
But he actually made like a little talon out of it.
Yeah. And essentially when the guy came to kill him, instead of like fighting or defending himself, he fucking killed himself.
He said, "You don't get to do this."
Yeah.
Put the thing to his throat and slashed his own throat.
And opened himself up. But it's like, why?
Yeah.
Defend yourself, maybe? Prove you're innocent?
Right.
So it makes him look guilty, but at the same time, he's in prison. You know what I mean? Like, it was kind of crazy. It was good. She's a great character. She's very interesting.
Well, she kind of goes off because Ben Mendelsohn is like, "Yeah, I don't deal with supernatural shit." And she's like, "Yeah, let me tell you something."
Yeah.
She's like, "I can just look at a... skyscraper and tell you exactly how many feet tall it is from the ground within an inch."
Yeah.
And she's like, "But heights make me sick." You know, she goes off on this whole thing, how she can tell you the words to any song verbatim that has come out since 1954, but I don't listen to music because I hate it.
Yeah.
So she's like this repository of information and she knows all of this stuff, but she's weird.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just fucking weird.
And then all the stuff you were talking about last week, like with, what was it, the nursing home?
Yeah.
And she goes down there to talk to the guy, and they never told him that he's been killed.
Yeah, the nursing home doesn't know Terry's dead.
Yeah. And she's like, why wouldn't they know?
Yeah.
Like, he was killed.
Yeah.
He should know that he was killed. And then we've got the whole thing with the little girl seeing the figure.
Yeah. Yeah.
And she said that the first time that he came around, he looked just like Daddy.
Yep.
But dirtier.
Yeah. And then now he doesn't look like...
Well, the second time he came around, he was blurry.
Yeah. Thank you, blurry. I couldn't think of the word. Yeah.
And you had brought that up because that came up in the second episode,
too. Where you see the guy in the distance with the hood on, and his face is kind of...
You were like, I don't know, it was like it was smudged or something. And then the little girl specifically says, you know, he was kind of, like, smudged.
Yeah.
So you're saying that, and I'm like, oh, watch the third episode. But she said that now he doesn't look like Daddy anymore, but he looks darker. Inkier. Inkier.
Yeah.
Which I didn't know if she was saying he was a black guy or if she was saying that he looked like he had, you know, dark blue black skin or what.
But basically, you need to stop or something bad's going to happen.
Yeah. She said, he gave me a message to give to the sheriff.
Only to you. Yeah. Ben Mendelsohn's character.
Yep.
Only to you, which is...
Stop.
Ralph.
Yeah. Stop. He's like, stop what? Just stop.
Just stop.
Or he's going to come back and he's going to make everybody pay, essentially.
It's good, though.
Yeah.
It's good, though.
So no Avenue 5.
Yeah, sorry. I watched two documentaries.
Oh, yeah?
First one's called Bottled Up. And it's about, it's fascinating. They're both on, the old Amazon Primey.
Mm-hmm.
And it's essentially about the Dublin, Texas Dr. Pepper bottling plant. who back in late 1800s, they got a contract, which is drawn on the back of a piece of paper. It shows their coverage area. It's like literally drew a map. And essentially they have like a 40-mile radius that they cover, because it's 40 miles is as far as the horse-drawn carriage can get in a day, and the product would still be good type of thing. But they bottled Dr. Pepper, and it's called, and actually it was kind of called Dublin Dr. Pepper. And then, you know, 130 years later, Dr. Pepper steps in and is like, oh, you can't call this Dublin Dr. Pepper. Because what happened was Dr. Pepper changed their formula as far as, instead of using real pure cane sugar, they used high fructose corn syrup. Well, this place decided to continue to using real pure sugar cane to make their Dr. Pepper. And it's really fascinating, actually. I can't really do good justice in describing it, but it really shows like tradition, a little guy, corporate greed, and stepping in, and how it can kind of fuck a town up and everything. A little town whose sole thing that they had every year was they were the home of the Dublin Dr. Pepper plant, who made glass bottled Dr. Pepper with real sugar, and people loved it and wanted it. And then when they get forced to stop making it, how the town basically fucking dies practically.
Ouch.
Yeah. So it was actually really interesting. I give it a good sell. I mean, it's a documentary.
Okay.
This next one, I'm just going to tell you about it. If you haven't seen it yet, I'm not going to talk about it until you go watch it.
Okay.
It's called The Power of Glove, also on Amazon, and it's all about the Nintendo Power Glove. It is
10 minutes?
Hour and 5 minutes long. It's a fascinating documentary.
Okay.
Because, I mean, did you know the Power Glove was not a Nintendo product? It was a Mattel product?
Yes,
I know that. But it talks to all people like how the Power Glove started had nothing to do with video games, and how it expanded from there, and how it became part of pop culture, and how people hacked it to do other stuff with it, and how, like, they even fucking talk about the wizard.
Well, they'd have to.
And how it was there, and they talk to the director and of it, and the writer or whatever, and I mean, it's really cool. It's on Amazon Prime. It's 65 minutes long. You need to go watch it so we can talk about it. Because I just thought it was wicked good, wicked fascinating. If you're...
Do they have the Huey Lewis song?
No. But that's the power of love.
Yeah. Well, it's called The Power of Glove, right?
True.
They kind of missed an opportunity.
The Power of Glove.
That's the power of glove.
If you like, I mean, like, you know, King of the Kong, you know, Man versus Snake, all those movies about the video gaming and everything like that, you know, even, yeah, this is great. This is right along those alleys. Like, you really like the one, the guy trying to find all the original Nintendo games. You know what I mean? Now I can't wait for them to do something on the, was that the Super Nintendo that had the scope?
That had the scope, yeah.
The Super Nintendo did. But yeah, you got to check out the Power Glove. It's excellent. It's excellent.
Okay.
Yeah. There's this thing. I mean, in the movie, it shows it. But, like, apparently, this orchestra played at the Nintendo store in New York. And they did a live concert of the... And it was the orchestra that recorded the music for the game. But of the 25th anniversary of Link,
mm-hmm.
of you know, Zelda, they did a live concert of the Zelda music with the orchestra in the store. And it actually was really cool.
That's cool.
Yeah. So, yeah, Power of Glove. Well worth watching.
Okay.
I got no movies besides that. I don't really have any news, per se. What you got for trailers?
Like I said, I wrote down one, but I didn't actually watch it, so I got to wait till next week. I watched one called The Last Thing He Wanted.
Yeah.
It's a Netflix movie. It's got Anne Hathaway and what's his name there? Batman. Ben Affleck.
Okay.
Yeah, I can't believe that. I just called him Batman.
Yeah.
But it looks okay. It's Iran-Contra times, and yeah, I don't know.
Did we talk about Vivarium last week?
No, we did not.
Okay, so you did send me that trailer.
Yep. Oh, yeah, I sent you trailers. You didn't send me trailers.
Well, okay, I said, do you have any trailers? And you were like, nope.
No, I didn't. I was like,
not really. Yeah, you sent me three trailers.
Yeah. Spencer Confidential.
Oh, and I sent you one news thing.
Yeah.
About Ryan Reynolds playing the voice of Bebo, being Detective Bebo in the Arrowverse.
which is awesome.
Yeah. I was like, is this fucking real?
So, yeah, I sent Spencer Confidential, which is supposed to be a spinoff or a reimagining of Spencer for Hollywood.
Okay, I thought so. I thought so.
With
Mark Wahlberg.
Yeah, Mark Wahlberg and a great big black guy.
It's an action flick.
Yep.
It's an action flick. Detective some kind.
Yep.
He was a police detective that got set up and went to prison, and he got out of prison, and the cops still going after him. He's got to prove he's innocent.
While keeping his head above water.
Yeah.
Yep, looks okay.
Yep.
Vivarium, as you mentioned, looks kind of twisted.
Fucked up.
It's a guy and a girl who are looking for a house. They go into this, like, one of those pre-built neighborhoods.
Prefab neighborhood, yep.
And they're taking the house number 9, and the guy's like, oh, this will be great for you to have a kid. And they're like, oh, the nursery's already blue. We don't have kids. We're not having any kids right now. And he's like, eh, okay. Really creepy looking guy.
Yeah.
They go to leave. They can't find their way out of the neighborhood ever.
Yep.
So they just spend the night in the house. And then it jumps around a lot, but it looks like they spend more than one night there. And they're getting airdrop supplies.
Yep.
Like, they keep getting these packages of, like, food. And then they get a package at one point that has a live baby in it.
Yep.
It says, raise the child and be released.
Yep.
And then you see, like, a door jam. And they're, like, day 27, day 32. Like, he seems to be growing.
The kid's growing at a rapid pace. And it is a piece of shit, too.
Yeah. And at one point, at the very end of the trailer, he, like, comes into the bedroom and he's, like, being a little asshole.
But it's almost like he's got a weird supernatural shit going on because he's doing this high-pitched yell thing.
Yeah.
And, you know.
And both of them just slowly flip him off, which I think is great.
I do, too.
So it looks interesting.
I'm going to watch the shit out of it.
Yep. And then the other one was Horse Girl.
Yeah.
This looks weird.
It does look
weird. But it looks interesting, too. Alison Brie.
Yep, big fan.
Who plays Horse Girl. Molly Shannon is, like, her friend. And we see her, like, I don't know, she doesn't have friends, but she kind of wants to have friends. And it just looks, the whole thing looks like a fucking mind trip.
Yeah, it's going to be in the Sundance at the end of this month, or today, and then next month it's going to be out in Netflix. And
Netflix is snatching up
a lot. The synopsis here is a socially awkward woman with fondness for arts and crafts, horses, and supernatural crime finds herself increasingly lucid dreams trickling into her waking life. I mean, because you're watching it, and all of a sudden she brings up, like, alien abduction. And it's just like, well, that's a turn I didn't expect.
Yeah. And it just looks to go weirder and weirder and more off the rails. So I'm going to check it out.
Yep.
I mean, absolutely. Again, Alison Brie, big fan.
Mm-hmm. Paul Reiser's in it. Robin Tunney, Debbie Ryan.
Yep, yep.
Molly Shannon. Yep.
So some news.
Sure.
Don't have a lot this week. There wasn't really a lot going on. Like I said, Guinan's coming back. Jodie Whittaker has officially said that she's on for at least one more season of Doctor Who beyond this one.
Oh, good.
So she'll have 3 under her belt. That's at least. Altered Carbon. Remember that show? The one where you get sleeves and...
Yeah.
Comes back February 27th.
Oh, shit. Really? Yeah.
This is the season with Anthony Mackie, I believe.
Okay.
So, and then the only other news that I really had, like I said, there wasn't a lot. We got a big news drop this week for Marvel TV and Hulu unveiled the cast for their animated series Marvel's MODOK.
Yeah.
So this is a fucking ensemble cast. And it's awesome. So in Marvel's MODOK, the megalomaniacal supervillain MODOK, which stands for mental organism designed only for killing, has long pursued his dream of one day conquering the world. But after years of setbacks and failures fighting the Earth's mightiest heroes, MODOK has run his evil organization AIM into the ground. Ousted as AIM's leader while also dealing with his crumbling marriage and family life, MODOK is set to confront his greatest challenge yet, a midlife crisis. So we've got Patton Oswalt will be playing MODOK. Awesome. He's got a neurotic voice to him. Amy Garcia as Jody, his wife. Amy Garcia was the lab tech, the Hispanic lab tech on Lucifer.
Okay.
Ben Schwartz as Lou. Fucking funny as shit. That's his 12-year-old son. Melissa Fumero, who is on Brooklyn Nine-Nine. She's Amy Santiago. She's awesome. She's the 7-year-old daughter of MODOK. Mm-hmm. We've got Wendy McClendon Covey as Monica Rapinski, brilliant mad scientist at AIM and MODOK's rival at work. Wendy is the mom on the Goldbergs.
Okay.
And then you've seen her on other stuff.
Yeah.
We've got Beck Bennett, John Daly, Sam Richardson, all comedians. This is a comedy gold mine for a cast. I'm excited.
It really is.
I want to check it out. I'm looking forward to that.
Nice.
Yeah.
Are we down to Doctor Who?
I think we're down to Doctor Who.
All right, well, we're talking about Doctor Who. If you want to hear it, stick around. If you don't want to hear about it right now, just get a pause and watch Doctor Who.
And honestly, I will say this too. This was such a monumental episode, and so much stuff happened in it, and so much, like,
it was huge,
redefining, that you really owe it to yourself to not listen to us until you watch this episode. Like, legitimately, I don't normally give out the extra spoiler warning, but seriously, do yourself a favor if you're a Doctor Who fan, watch this episode. Even if you say, I'm not caught up on this season, watch it out of order, because you don't need to see the first ones in this episode.
No, you really don't.
But check this out. Yeah. So there's your extra, extra spoiler warning.
So the episode opens with the Doctor looking at her control panel on the TARDIS, and the companions just kind of sitting there hanging out.
She's kind of scowling a bit.
Yeah, and finally, like, they're like, what's she doing? I don't know. She's searching. What's she searching for? I don't know. What she's always been searching for. And then she looks up, well, how long have you guys been here? Like 20 minutes. You know, and basically she's doing the Doctor thing she does, where they ask her questions, and she basically shuts them down.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, she's really withdrawing into herself.
Yeah, which is weird, because in the last season, she really wasn't doing any of that.
Nope.
She was all about, oh, this is my fam, and we're da-da-da-da-da. Now she's more like, eh, well, we're...
Well, she's really been thrown off by this whole reemergence of the Master.
Yep.
And finding out that he destroyed Gallifrey.
Mm-hmm.
Again. So right. Gallifrey's been destroyed again.
Twice now.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that he's back, and she's like, why am I even doing this? Like, she's getting a little introspective.
So after we kind of, well, we see that eventually, but we open up on Ruth. You meet Ruth.
Mm. Ruth is cool.
Ruth is her birthday. She's 44. She just wants some good toast. Her boyfriend, whatever, is kind of a piece of shit. His name is Lee.
Yeah. He's basically painted as the shiftless layabout kind.
Yes. Yeah.
He doesn't really have a job. He didn't get her the cake. He didn't get her a present. Yeah. You know.
She's a... tour guide who gives out tours of Edinburgh.
Gloucester.
And can't really seem to drum up any business.
No.
And then the...
She goes to a local bakery to get coffee, and the guy there that is making her birthday cake...
It loves her. Yeah, and I would do anything for you.
He's a dick, too, because he's one of these guys who says, you can do better. He's a piece of shit. Look, I've got a whole dossier on him, and I can show you that, you know, he's no good for you.
He's sketchy.
Yeah. He doesn't talk to people, and he doesn't look around, and blah, 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 blah. He's a dick. Like these are the fucking asshole guys that need to get kicked in the balls.
Yep. And she's like, is this an actual dossier on him? And he's like, yeah. And we find out that Jadoon are back.
Yes.
Yes.
The Platoon of Jadoon.
Yes, the space rhinos.
Which, as the Doctor describes them, they're like mercenary cops. They're cops.
They're cops.
But they're very trigger-happy.
For hire.
Very aggressive and very for hire. So the worst kind of space police.
I would call them more bounty hunters, mm-hmm. but they do live by a code and rules and regulations and contracts, and everything is important. And they shield off a section of Gloucester because they're looking for the fugitive.
Yes.
And straight away, Lee basically makes himself out to be the fugitive.
Of course.
Like, it's assumed.
He's a loner. He's got no history.
Yeah.
And he doesn't even try to deny it, basically.
Nope. So the Jadoon go down to Earth, and they start scanning people and stamping them, showing that they've been cleared. They're not the fugitive because they're looking for the fugitive. They mindlessly kill an old woman.
Well, she did present a weapon, which was knitting needles.
Yeah, and then ran away.
Yeah.
And so
they had told her to stop.
Yeah.
So they had no choice but to shoot
her. You know, of course, they end up in the bakery. Oh, so Lee ends up in the bakery to pick up the cake, and the cake says, you can do better on it.
Yeah. The guy literally put it in icing. Yep. You can do better.
And the doctor, in the meantime, gets herself down there, and of course, is getting in the way and
trying to. Well, she's happy to have something to do. I think
a distraction.
She uses the psychic paper. Yep. Basically, says that you know she's their boss, and she's going to go intervene and talk to this person. I love the exchange that they have where, like, they're going to use a temporal gun, and she's like, this has been outlawed, the radiation kills people, blah, blah, you're going to let me go over there, and you're going to let me talk. And they're like, well, fine, but, you know, we're coming in, and
yeah.
She's like, no, you give me 10 minutes, and they're like, 5, and she's like, 9, and they go, 4, and she's like, damn it, I'll take 5.
Yeah.
She's like, I hate it when they do that.
So they head off to do that. In the meantime, Graham goes into the coffee shop.
Mm.
And Lee's there, and Lee is there with the coffee shop fella,
mm-hmm.
and the fella leaves because, hey, there's bad shit going on. We need to get out of here. So her and, well, Lee and Ruth run back home, and the doctor heads over there to fill out the Jadoon, and then Graham's over there, and he all of a sudden disappears, and then the Jadoon show up, and
cake shop guys
are dick to them, and he pushes one of them, and so he's executed for assaulting an officer.
At first he's like, look, I've got you're looking for a fugitive, I know who it is, there's his dossier right there, I can tell you exactly who it is.
Yeah.
And then they knock stuff over, and so he decides,
he's like, hey,
yeah,
they knock over some cups on the counter,
and he shoves them,
and then they execute him.
Yeah, because they said assaulting an officer, sentence death.
So Graham is on he wakes up on a spaceship. A voice tells him not to move. As soon as I heard the voice, I was like, oh, my God. And because of the, you know, the micro lasers, and they get everywhere and on and on and on. And then finally, you can move now. And then the pilot appears, and it's Captain Jack Harkness.
Dude, I literally sat straight up in bed. I went, are you fucking kidding me?
They brought Captain Jack back.
It's been like 10 years.
It's been a long
years.
Time.
It's been a long time.
And Captain Jack thinks Graham's the doctor. And kisses him on the mouth a couple times, all excited to see him. And then finally, like...
And how cool is it that Graham didn't, like, slap him or anything like that? Like, hey, get the fuck off me. It's just like, all right, what's going on?
Yeah. And
basically... He looks at him and he's like, oh, you're old. Yeah, I like the gray,
what you doing? You know, and then essentially he's like, well, I'm not the doctor. Because it cuts back to them. He's like, so you're sure you're not the doctor? Because they're getting shot at because Jack stole the spaceship.
Yeah.
So then he was using
a scoop.
Yeah, he uses the scoop and he pulls up the
Ryan
other two.
And Yaz.
Thank you, Ryan and Yaz. And he's like, well, you know, you're not the doctor, so it's you because he said she.
It's girl.
and Yaz goes, no, I'm not the doctor either. And she's like, three of you? I had a dream like this once.
Graham looks at him and goes, hope you saved the money on that scoop.
Yeah.
Hope you saved the receipt for that scoop.
Yeah. In the meantime, the doctor's down with Ruth. They go to the cathedral.
Well, Lee, basically.
Oh, sorry, yes.
Yeah, Lee sees them closing in, and he's like, you've got to get her out of here. Protect her. I will come along afterwards.
The doctor finds the silver box.
Yep.
They can't open. Lee won't tell him what's in it. Finally, Lee comes up. He's like, yep, it's mine. Just give me the box. You get her out of here, et cetera, et cetera. They go out and leave. The Jadoon come in. They confront Lee.
Along with?
This woman shows up.
Gat.
Yep.
And she seems to be in charge. They're talking about how they have to, you know, turn the fugitive over to the contract holder.
Yes.
And she's talking to Lee.
Yeah, it's like, I represent the contract holder.
Yep.
Yeah.
Opens the silver box. She's like, you were sentimental. You kept it all this time. You knew it would be, with that radiation, it would only be a matter of time till I found you. And
yeah.
She opens it up, and it's just some trinket. And he's like, it's my, what did he say? It's my medal. Why the wouldn't
medal.
I have kept it?
Yeah, Medal of Valor or something like that. Well, she kills him. And the Jadoon are pissed because that's a violation of their contract.
Right.
Yeah. And then we cut to the Doctor and Ruth in the cathedral, and then the Jadoon show up there. And
Ruth got a text.
Ruth gets a text, and the text says something about breaking the light at the lighthouse, or she sees.
Yeah. It says, follow the light, break the glass.
Yes.
Happy birthday, X.
And she's having a flashback of this. Vision of this lighthouse. But we're not
interspersed with everything else that's happened today.
And then when the Jadoon show up, for whatever reason, she gets skills, beats them all up, takes the gun, threatens them, and then rips the horn off the captain.
Yeah.
And then is like, I don't know how I did that. Yeah. I don't know where it came from. I don't know.
And at this point, I'm formulating some stuff in my head that turned out to be right. You know, I'm just thinking about it, and I'm like, this seems very familiar. This seems like John Smith back in the day.
Oh, yeah.
You know, I'm like, this is – something is off here, so.
Well, she – and – well, because the what's her face? The Jadoon scanner, and it's like, now that we have your deflector shield frequency, we find that you are the fugitive.
Mm-hmm.
So they – the doctor and her drive to the lighthouse. And at no time, though, does the doctor even seem concerned about her companions.
Right.
She has no idea where they are, and they're up on the ship with Captain Jack.
Which is another bad mark for her.
Yes.
You know, she's kind of going off in her own world here.
She's not even concerned about what they are, who they are, what they're doing.
So already, okay, so we're covering this, but I just want to take a step back from this for a minute and say that already in this episode, out of the blue...
Yeah.
We've gotten the return of Captain Jack. Not in like a poster form.
No.
Not in like a somebody mentioning him, but legitimately John Barrowman doing the Captain Jack thing in the coat, everything. Okay? Fucking loving this. And the energy of this episode, the whole mysterious, the traveler, the blah, everything feels good. It feels like old school Doctor Who.
It really does. Yeah.
Like, I legitimately tried looking up and was disappointed, but I thought maybe they somehow tapped into some old Russell T. Davies stuff. Like, this felt like old school Who. And by that, I mean, of course, you know, from 2005 on.
Correct.
But I mean, like, the David Tennant days, the early Matt Smith days, like, this felt like good old Who.
Well, we haven't seen Captain Jack since David Tennant left.
Right.
That's what it was.
Yeah.
And it was funny because I read a thing that John Barrowman posted. Like, and he's like, after the episode aired, well, after I watched the episode, I happened to see it. I'm glad I didn't see it before. But basically where he says, like, so I was sworn to secrecy. I couldn't tell anyone. Well, except my husband. I told him. Well, then I told my parents, you know. And then I told da-da-da-da-da. Now, of course, I told David Tennant. But now I get to tell all of you.
I saw something else that he had written where he basically said that he had gone to England to see a play where Bill Pullman was in. And Bill Pullman had shown up in Miracle Day, the Torchwood movie. So he was there, and afterwards he got pulled aside, and his agent was like, Chris Chibnall wants to talk to you. And he's like, what? And so he called Chris Chibnall, and he's like, hey, how do you feel about bringing Captain Jack back? He goes, I literally screamed out loud.
Yeah.
And then he was taping a live show, probably one of these like celebrity, you know, but he was taping a live show when this aired, and he kept looking down at his phone and seeing all the Twitter responses and Instagram responses, and everybody was losing their shit. And he said it made him like cry because people were, he said there was no negative. There was not one bit of negative for anybody about Captain Jack being back. Like, nobody had a bad thing to say, and I believe that.
Thank God my wrestling, my Twitter is primarily wrestling stuff, and because of Edge returning in the Royal Rumble, was so huge that just filled my Twitter feed and buried everything about Captain Jack being out, because I was looking at Twitter all day, and I saw nothing, and then I watched the episode, and I picked up my phone afterwards to text message you, have you seen Doctor Who yet? Yes. And then I, Captain Jack! And then, like, I hit, like, Twitter... And it pops up, and like within 2 seconds, I see all this Captain Jack stuff, and it's just like, well, this worked out for me.
I almost sent something to you last night.
Yeah.
And I thought, no, don't even invite that kind of trouble. Just don't.
Yeah, I'm glad you didn't.
Yeah.
I'm glad you held off.
Yeah. Because that way it was an even bigger surprise, because I kept my mouth shut about that and didn't say, dude, there's a fucking spoiler in here that. But that wasn't even the biggest one.
No, it wasn't. So Captain Jack. Well, I'm going to focus on this real quick.
Yeah.
Captain Jack says, beware. He's like, I got to get out of here. I'm going to send you guys back. I'm going to program this.
Because he's getting attacked.
Because I'm getting attacked.
Nanomachines.
Yeah, the nanomachines are going to come at me. Tell the doctor that I'll see her again. Tell her I said hi. Tell her I'll see you again. You have to give her this message. Beware the final or the lone. Beware the lone Cyberman. I just said, look on my note.
Yep.
And as soon as he said that, I was just like, fuck.
Yeah.
Cybermen are going to be back? Okay, so let's go back a little bit. When we see the final David Capaldi years, and we learn...
Peter Capaldi.
Sorry, David Capaldi, is that what I said?
Yeah.
Peter Capaldi years. And we see, like, they gave us the story of the birth of the Cybermen, and it was just like... I immediately thought of that, and I was just like, fuck. Like, that was terrible.
Mm-hmm.
So then I started thinking that Ruth was a Cyberman.
Mm-hmm.
in disguise somehow.
Right.
That was my thought.
Right.
And that Lee somehow knew, but that fucking nod earlier. Anyways. So he says, beware of the lone Cyberman. Do not give it what it wants.
No matter what.
No matter what.
Well, at first the companions are like, what's a Cyberman? He's like, you haven't seen the Cyberman? And he basically lays it out, but it's different from what we know.
Yeah.
Because he says that they're an entire empire that lays in ruins and they have to stay that way.
Yeah.
The Alliance has been working against them. Beware the lone Cyberman. And they're like, what Alliance?
Yeah.
And he's like, just tell the doctor. Make sure she gets that message.
And that also they sent someone from deep. What was it? Do you have the exact wording?
No, but I'll find it real quick.
He just basically says that they've sent somebody to help or to stop the Cybermen. That wasn't clear. But the description was through deep space and time, I believe, or from across the galaxy and back in time.
Which all kind of goes to what the Master was talking about as well.
Yeah.
Because he was talking about everything that you know is a lie. And hold on. See if I can find this. Yeah, I don't know. Bear with us, people.
It's worth it.
It's definitely worth it because, again, we haven't even gotten to the most amazing part of this episode.
Yeah. Okay, back through time across space.
Yep.
The Alliance sent something back through time across space in order to defeat the Cybermen, but he doesn't say what it is because the ship security protocols zap him away.
Right.
Yes.
Yes.
So he gets zapped away.
And the Master's already talked about the Timeless Child, the lie of the Timeless Child. Everything you know is a lie.
Yeah.
So there's a lot this season that is really hearkening back to what we love about Doctor Who.
And so we see Ruth and now the Doctor at the lighthouse. And the drive to the lighthouse, Ruth tells her backstory. Her parents owning the lighthouse, leaving to her death, how she didn't want to be there, didn't want to live that solitary life, on and on and on. Her parents are buried on the grounds, et cetera, et cetera.
Yep.
And the Doctor sees a tombstone. There's no marking on it. She scans it. She runs over to it. She starts to dig it up. And in the interim, we see Ruth, who sees this thing that says break glass. And she gets basically
this little circle on the wall with a button in the middle of it.
And Ruth gets overcome with just the is drawn to break it. Now, essentially, they kind of do quick flashes back and forth. But at the same time, the Doctor unveils what says police box. So it's like she's digging up a TARDIS.
Yeah, you could see that it is a TARDIS.
Yes, and then it's like, what the fuck is that? And then Ruth breaks the glass and the fucking regeneration energy comes out and hits her. I went, is this the fucking Doctor? Like, or a Time Lord of some kind? But is the Doctor? Because, and then Ruth walks out and it's got
a badass outfit,
a badass costume that is clearly a Doctor costume.
Uh-huh.
And then
that
starts
shirt, that jacket.
Yeah. And then starts saying, oh, let me start from the beginning. You know, I'm the Doctor. I travel through space and time and that's my spaceship. It's called the TARDIS and da 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 da. And I'm like, why doesn't she know her?
Yeah, exactly. Why doesn't one of them know the other one?
Yeah.
Because the last time we saw this kind of technology was in the Martha Jones age, which is interesting because that's the first time we saw the Jadoon as well.
Yeah.
We saw the Martha Jones age where the Doctor was hiding from the family blood.
Yeah.
Again, one of the best two-part episodes. Amazing. But he did the same thing. He locked away his essence so that a biological scan showed him as human.
Yeah.
Every sensor in the world showed him as human. Even the sonic screwdriver, when Jodie Whittaker's Doctor used it on Ruth, couldn't detect anything.
Right. Human.
So this was her version of the pocket watch.
Yeah.
You know, from the family blood.
Ruth, I'm going to call her Ruth, takes the Doctor's hand and they kind of.
Everyone's calling her Ruth Doctor.
Yeah. They kind of, like the War Doctor, kind of like materialize into the TARDIS and they're standing there together.
Which is weird because.
And
that's
TARDIS,
never been done.
Nope.
There's no teleportation, like. But it was the same kind of thing that happened with Jack's scoop.
Yes.
The same kind of blue light and everything.
And It's weird because when they get in there, it looks smaller than we're normally seeing inside a TARDIS.
It looks almost like
bare bones. Yes, it does. Old bare bones. Mm-hmm. Ruth Doctor doesn't seem to notice that the Doctor isn't surprised that it's bigger on the inside or how they got there, even questioning where they are. Mm-hmm. And instead, it's just like, oh, you use the chameleon arch to hide yourself from Gat, and that's why this couldn't detect you. And Ruth Doctor's like, what is that little toy you have?
Yeah.
The sonic screwdriver?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But they both have this thing where they come to realize, like, they say the same things.
That's after she scans her with the screwdriver, scans herself, and says we're the same person. Because she says, I'm the Doctor. Right. No, you're not. And then they start doing that bit where they're saying the same shit.
And then they realize, they're like, I don't remember you and you don't remember me. I should either be your past or your future. Yeah. I don't remember you.
Yes.
So I can't be your future, but you don't remember me.
So I can't be your past. Friend. Yeah.
So both of them claim to be the Doctor. The Sonic shows them both as the same being.
Yeah.
But neither of them remembers each other from anywhere in there.
Which is crazy.
It's awesome.
Yeah, but crazy. But this Doctor has a gun, a laser blaster,
mm-hmm.
which
she had kept buried in the lighthouse.
And Doctor doesn't seem real impressed with Ruth Doctor having this gun. Because doctors don't use the gun. Doctor has never used a gun.
But she also makes fun of that
sonic screwdriver.
She says, I'm too smart to ever need some little toy like that.
Yeah. So they get tractor beamed up by Gat to the ship. And they get up there. And essentially there's a bunch of posturing with the gun and the Jadoon there, and then turning the gun over to Gat. And Gat's got the gun pointed at the Doctor, and the Doctor repeats, don't point it at me, don't shoot me. Yeah, Ruth Doctor, don't point at me, this and that.
And
Ruth Doctor also tells the Doctor not to say that you're the Doctor.
Because basically she says, if Gat finds out that you're the Doctor, she'll destroy us both.
Yeah. Ruth explains that she had once worked for Gat, but left when something you really can't leave.
Mm-hmm.
So the Doctor throws the curveball of saying, hey, scan me. I'm the Doctor as well. So the Jadoon scan her. And because they are the same person, two fugitives, they get paid twice.
Yeah. That's so like, they figure.
And so now that causes a monkey wrench because the Jadoon's like, we need to be paid twice. So now, because Gat wants to take care of this now. And he's like, no, we don't deliver her to you. We deliver her to the contractor.
Right.
And this and that. And so Gat makes comment going to Gallifrey. And the Doctor's like, whoa, wait a second. You must be from my past because Gallifrey's gone. That means
destroyed twice.
Yeah. In my lifetime, it's been destroyed twice. And so that means that, you know, you're standing up for what's ashes and this and that, ruins and ashes. Oh, and the other thing, too, is Gat that is... Gat's like, there's no way that you're the Doctor because two Time Lords can't exist in the same time and space and this and that.
Yeah.
But they are. It's kind of cool as shit.
It's really cool
and it's confusing and it's cool. And so she tells Gat from one time to another, look at my memories and you'll see. And she shows Gat, you know, yep. Gallifrey's destroyed. And so Gat, of course, goes in denial about it.
Yeah. This is some kind of trick. This can't be true.
Yep.
And then she pulls the trigger.
At Ruth Doctor.
Yep. And Ruth Doctor had set it up so that the gun would backfire and it destroyed her. And it
killed Gat.
And so then she picks up the gun, recalibrates it, and the Jadoon are like, we have witnessed murder. A crime has taken place. We must carry out the sentence. She goes, uh-uh. First off, I didn't murder her. She killed herself.
It was an accident.
It was an accident.
Yep.
And secondly, traveling at 80 million kilometers per second, we entered
this neutral zone,
it's
basically.
Not international space, but it's basically
this neutral zone where no crime, where you can't, where you have no jurisdiction.
12 seconds ago.
Yeah.
You have no jurisdiction out here, so no crime was committed. No sentence needs to be
carried out. Right, Doctor? Yeah.
And basically gets on her TARDIS, takes the Doctor back.
Hold on. There is one quick thing where she grabs the gun and recalibrates it. And Doctor says to Ruth Doctor, we don't use guns.
Yeah.
And Ruth Doctor then says, I know that, but don't tell them, basically. Right.
So, which is also weird.
Well, so that, to me, it's all the posturing with the gun was posturing.
But she still used the gun knowing that Gat would kill herself.
True. And when the doctor confronted Ruth Doctor about that, she basically said, like, don't give me semantics.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. I kept telling her not to fire. Yep. I kept telling her not to pull the trigger. But you knew it was going to happen. Well, I gave her every opportunity.
So Ruth departs the doctor. Ruth Doctor drops the doctor off in Gloucester.
Well, and but she makes sure to say, I'm going to park you a little bit outside because I don't want our TARDISes getting too close to each other. You don't know what that'll do to the time stream.
Yeah. Well, we've seen TARDISes close enough to each other in the past.
Oh, yeah.
Many times.
Yeah.
But again, okay.
But it's the same TARDIS, you know. No, because they were all the same TARDIS.
They were all the same TARDIS, yeah. So the companions, they meet up with the doctor, tell about Harkness's message. They don't tell her about the traveler from space and time or whatever that's going to come, but at least the doctor shares. She tells him all about what's happened recently with the master, with Harkness, with Ruth, her being the doctor as well and not being, you know what I mean? She explains everything to them. Mm-hmm. And Ryan's like, all right, well, we'll confront it. And the doctor's like, well, it's really, you don't know me, Ryan. I've been alive for so long, done so many things, seen so many different, had so many different faces. You don't know me. And Ryan and Yaz is like, don't talk to him that way.
Yeah.
And Ryan's like,
and he's like, no, I'm not going to take this.
Yeah. No, we're family. That's what we are. We're not mates. We're family. You're with the best person we know. Like, they basically all give her a pep talk saying that they'll work together and we're going to do this together and go on these adventures. And the doctor gets her spirits lifted.
Yep.
And then gets an alert and they take off.
Yep.
So it was an amazing episode.
Which I'm really hoping that the next episode picks up with this distress call.
I did watch scenes from the next Doctor Who and it does.
Okay, good.
Yes. But what's really cool is...
like there's one thing.
I know. Okay. Jack being back is great. And he says, I'll see her again. Maybe not soon, but I'll see her again. So that was awesome.
Yes.
I think I love the fact that they basically filmed all his scenes on one set. So, like, he didn't travel around. They just kind of confined to one place, you know. So you can keep it a secret a lot easier.
Yes.
We met a new doctor.
Yes.
We met Ruth Doctor. That's what I'm going to call
her. And
Dr.
Ruth. Did you watch the credits at the end?
No.
Oh, the credits started rolling down. Her name was like Joe Tenor or something like that.
Joe Martin or something.
Yeah, Joe Martin. So it's like going down through and it's like Ruth, Joe Martin, blah, blah, blah. And then just like in that Matt Smith episode, it said, and introducing Joe Martin as the Doctor.
Oh, that's cool.
That's fucking cool.
So this is where the timeline's kind of confusing in this or that.
Everybody is speculating already.
So now, okay, do you think that Ruth Doctor takes place prior to William Hartnell?
No. I think, personally, Ruth Doctor is an alternate universe Doctor.
Gosh, I don't know if I like that. The show has so much going on already. Like, they need to introduce alternate universes.
They already have.
Well...
Remember back with Rose, she got trapped in the alternate universe?
Yeah, but they somehow made that seem like it wasn't something they could easily...
Oh, yeah, because he said you're not supposed to be able to go between universes. TARDISes are not meant to cross. The barrier is supposed to be there. It'll be catastrophe.
That's true.
So they sealed it up then and said that it couldn't happen. However, it's still a possibility.
Earlier when Gat called Lee the companion.
Yes.
Or killed him. Yeah.
So that's because think about it. When Tennant did it, Martha Jones was there to watch over him the whole time. And she knew what was going on, but she was also a human, just like he was.
Yeah. It's interesting. So you think it's an alternate universe Doctor?
That's my best guess as of right now.
I'm wondering if what the Master was saying was that we existed longer than we think, but they just erased our memories.
That could be it, too.
And they're introducing this Doctor as the actual original Doctor.
Before William Hartnell?
Yeah. And maybe not even the first Doctor, but just the first one we're going to meet. I mean, that would open up a whole new world of Doctors.
It would. The only problem with that is that William Hartnell stole the TARDIS and used the chameleon circuit to turn it into a police box, and then it got stuck. But that wasn't even until, the third Doctor? Because the third Doctor, was still fixing it. It turned into a piano at one point. Like, it could disguise itself as different things. And then they eventually made it so that it was a police box because it was just easier. But the TARDIS used to be able to change to other things. So why would we have this doctor that has it as a police box?
Fair, because they do consider the original Doctor Who series all part of canon.
We saw Clara. Yep. Introducing William Hartnell, you might want to take this TARDIS instead.
Yes.
So, that's the hard part for that, because I thought of that as well. Which would be really cool if there was a whole group of regenerations before.
But it wouldn't make sense because of the TARDIS being there.
Right. If it hadn't,
been the police box, if it had been something else, she said, oh, this is my TARDIS.
Right.
Then that could pull it off. But maybe alternate universe then.
Because it is definitely the Doctor.
Yeah.
According to the
According to the show. Yeah. Well, it's badass either way.
Oh my god, it's so badass.
I'm very excited for next week's episode. I'm looking forward to it.
This was probably the best episode that I have seen of Doctor Who in years.
I can get behind that.
I mean, I was just blown away. I would have been blown away just by Jack coming back.
Well, if I think back to some of my favorite Doctor Who episodes and moments, there's a lot of great moments in episodes. Mm-hmm. But as far as powerful episodes, David Tennant's final episode.
Oh, yeah.
Really takes the cake. Him saying goodbye to everybody.
Dude, there were so many, like, yeah, you're right. There are some episodes. A lot of David Tennant had great episodes. Midnight.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Shit. Don't Blink.
Oh, jeez, yeah.
You know, his finale, the two-parter there with the family blood. I mean, David Tennant had some fucking Silence in the Library. Jesus. The introduction of River Song. Like, anyway, I mean, that was the introduction and death of River Song.
Basically.
Fucking, yeah. But you're right. There are a lot of phenomenal moments.
There's a lot of phenomenal moments where even the episode, maybe the whole episode isn't fantastic, but the moment's amazing.
Seeing K-9 Sarah Jane Smith.
This was a great episode.
This was. And I hate to say this. I don't know if this makes me more of a fan or less of a fan, but this was the first time since Jodie Whittaker took over that I actually felt like this was a real strong Doctor Who episode. Like, she's had some good stuff, but this was the first time that I was like, holy shit, this is why I fell in love with this show. This was phenomenal.
It really was. It really was. Damn.
Anyway.
Yeah.
That's all I got.
All right, well, we'll call it a day. I'm Twitter, I'm Superstar Mel.
I'm Quantum Geek, 2332K.
And that's the show.